Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 8th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our participant code is 449-389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 34. Again, Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 34. And this is right after the Sermon on the Mount. And when he was entered into a ship, that's Jesus, when Jesus entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. And his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. And he said unto them, Why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? And when he was come to the other side, into the country of Gergesenes, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but Gergesenes, there met him two possessed with devils coming out of the tombs, exceeding fierce, so that no man might pass by that way. And behold, they cried out, saying, What have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God? Art thou come hither to torment us before the time? And there was a good way off from them a herd of many swine feeding. So the devils besought him, saying, If thou cast us out, suffer us to go away into the herd of swine. And he said unto them, Go. And when they were come out, they went into the herd of swine, and behold, the whole herd of swine ran violently down a steep place into the sea, and perished in the waters. And they that kept them fed and went their ways into the city and told everything. And that was the fallen to the possessed of the devils. And behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they besought him that he would depart out of their coasts. Okay, there was Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 through 34. Okay, last week we were speaking about some papers we're going to be filing in the court, and we thought that we'd be finished with them by this Monday, and we'd read them tonight, and we have finished with them. We did go through checking this, but, you know, always when we read these things out loud, we find some corrections that might be made, and so any corrections that we could be made, we'll make them tomorrow and get them out. There is a copy of this, if anybody wants to get a copy. And again, remember, this is still a draft because we still may make some corrections to it. But you can go up to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight grand jury and click on docket. And it is, bring my thing going here. Okay, papers filed. It's going to be number... let me refresh my page, maybe, because I know I put it up here. Hang on a second. I think it's 1023. Yep, there it is, 1023. And we labeled this. I struggled with what to call this paper, because it's something very different. Nobody has ever done what we're going to be doing. And basically, we want to explain to all involved in the court exactly what our intentions are, and that this is a court of record, and that it is an Article III court. And so I called this Information Brief, Clarifying Extraordinary Proceeding. Anybody can come up with another idea, you know, get your ideas to Jan. or me and or Gerard, and maybe we'll give it a different name. But I think that name's probably pretty good. Information, brief, clarifying, extraordinary proceedings. So we want to explain how the process of this court is going to run. And again, it's an extraordinary proceeding for sure that we are going forward with. Since the courts won't open courts of justice, we the people will. And that's why we got this number. I think, I believe that the magistrate who has been put in charge of our case as a magistrate, you know, we informed him early on of what we expect of him. And we explained to him this was a court of record. There'll be no summary judgments here. And he has been very quiet. He hasn't said anything. There's been a couple of letters written from U.S. attorney, which we responded to. By the way, that letter is 10101703, U.S. attorney letter to dismiss. Sounded just like the attorney general. He sent one too, and we answered that also. We answered that, which will be answered this week, with 101704 answer to the U.S. attorney in a letter, the U.S. attorney's letter. We answered on the record. They seem to think that they can write letters to the judge and tell him just throw the case out. I mean, they don't even do it formally. I mean, they're really, I don't know what they are. But anyway, so we did respond to that paper. I think it was 3 pages. I'm not going to read that tonight. People can read that on their own. You should read the letter and then read our response. But I am going to read this information brief clarifying the extraordinary proceedings because people need to understand what we're doing. And so if anybody has any comments on this particular paper, you can bring them up tonight as we're in Q&A, or if you have any thoughts and ideas you want to get to us that we might want to consider, you can get a hold of Jan, me, or Gerard. Okay, so let's read this. Information brief clarifying extraordinary proceedings. The purpose of this memorandum is in support of an extraordinary response to extraordinary events designed by New World Order subverts executed by power-hungry tyrants to abolish our American Republic and trodden underfoot the laws of nature's God through unlawful legislation and unjust courts in jurisdictions unknown, where statutory prisons, many for profit, have been and continue to be constructed in order to imprison and enslave we, the free people of these United States of America. This extraordinary action at law is not unlike the unanimous declaration of the 13 colonies of America, where we read concerning when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to execute an extraordinary response and secure the powers assumed among the powers of the earth, and separate the equal stations to the laws of nature, to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. As we declared, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is we the people's right. It is their duty to throw off such despots and to provide new gods for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these United States. And such is now the necessity which constrains them to impeach through Congress or indict the tyrants and subverts in this court of record, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it and to institute new servants, laying its foundation on the Declaration of Independence, Constitution for the United States of America, and its capstone Bill of Rights, that rests upon such principles and organizes its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Now, I may take out that last part, maybe just end it at the end of the Bill of Rights, but we'll think about that. Congress, who has the power to restore a republic by impeaching these judicial tyrants for bad behavior, that is to say, violate their oath by serving and protecting the New World Order. I thought, Jan, didn't we move this next paragraph up, connected to this paragraph, before we gave
yes,
the quote
to
Article 3? I don't know why it's not in the paper. Yeah. All right, let me read it the way, let me make sure that I have the right copy here. Yeah, I don't know why that didn't make that correction. Okay, well, I'll read it the way it should be. If people are reading it, it's going to be a little off, but the way it should be. That is to say, to violate their oath by serving and protecting the New World Order. Therefore, since Congress refuses to perform their constitutional duty by impeaching these tyrants, we the people, through the grand jury, as the sureties of peace, will remove them by way of indictments. And then we quoted Article 3, Section 1. The judges, both of the Supreme and Inferior Court, shall hold their office during good behavior, Article 3, Section 1. You know, that might have been right. We may have pulled a different part of the paragraph up for the next quote, which is Article 4. So, let me read this the way it is written, and this is the correct way, so see how it goes and sounds. Okay, Congress, who has the power to restore a republic by impeaching these judicial tyrants for bad behavior, that is to say, violate their oath by serving and protecting the New World Order. And we quoted Article 3, Section 1. The judges both of the Supreme and Inferior Court shall hold their office during good behavior. Good behavior is lawfulness. Good behavior is obedience to their oath. Good behavior is exercising the Constitution and not bringing us into jurisdictions unknown. Therefore, since Congress refuses to perform their constitutional duty by impeaching these tyrants, we the people, through the grand jury, as the sureties of peace, will remove them by way of indictments. The United States, and we quoted Article 4, Section 4, the United States shall guarantee to every state of this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. So that's Congress's job. And they obviously are not doing it very well. Therefore, at this time, we the people have chosen a court of record in our Article 3 court as the venue to restore justice before they come with guns to take our guns. See Memorandum of Law in Support of Amendment 2, dated March 1st, 2017, attached. Now, once we perfect this paper, which hopefully we'll finish off tomorrow, we're going to attach all of these memorandums to this one paper, so when you download this one paper, you'll be able to get all the memorandums connected with it. But all these memorandums are under the law documents. No, not under the law documents. They're under the filed papers on the same page, the docket page. So if you look at papers filed, you'll find these memorandums as we refer to them. There's about 8 of them, I think. So this first one is on the Second Amendment. Okay, because of subversion of the law by some and ignorance of the law by most, this brief will act as a vehicle to convey to the court the essential facts and laws of this case. It is prepared to serve as the basis for a position upon a cause and information of this court for instruction and guidance of the trial. It contains, in general, all the information necessary to enable this case to proceed. We the people are not requesting that a court follow a new course of action. We have already ordained and established a particular course of action under Article 3. And because the judiciary has subverted American justice, we the people are reestablishing it, which is our unalienable right. Bartort attorneys will try and claim that the people are not educated to take control of the courts, whereas black laws, this is bullet number one. Black's law defines a court as the person in the suit of the sovereign, the place where the sovereign sojourns with his regal retinue, wherever that may be, an agency of the sovereign created by it directly or indirectly under its authority, consisting of one or more offices, established and maintained for the purpose of hearing and determining issues of law and fact regarding legal rights and alleged violations thereof, and of applying the sanctions of the law authorized to exercise its power in the course of law at times and places previously determined by lawful authority. And we also give a U.S. Decision on that, Isabel versus Stroval, I think that's pronounced. Another bullet point. Thomas Jefferson said, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional powers." Bullet point three. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Thomas Jefferson. An enlightened citizenship is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens, Thomas Jefferson. And obviously they have not done that, and we understand why. Since government has removed a proper education in our schools, NLA has taken on the role of educating the people as we move to bring a proper education back into our schools. Bullet point, I think five this is, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be, another quote by Thomas Jefferson. Bullet point number six, common law courts find their roots in Mosaic law, going back some 3,500 years, without judges, but with tribunals, that are juries, and magistrates who are administrators. And when a magistrate was unavailable, the sheriff or the coroner would take the administrative role. Under the common law, judges and prosecutors never controlled the court. The people did. Bar tort attorneys will try and claim that the common law has been abrogated. But the truth is that the common law was established as the foundation of American law when we called upon the laws of nature and of nature's God in the Declaration of Independence. It is an unalienable right protected under the Seventh Amendment and therefore can never be abrogated. It is the law of the land. The conspiracy to abrogate the common law found its repugnant beginnings in bar tort schools, where the subversion and propaganda indoctrinated most bar tort lawyers and judges who have become the minions of the New World Order. See Memorandum of Facts dated December 13, 2016, attached. Bar tort attorneys will try and claim that the people don't have the authority or the education to call forth and counsel the grand and trial juries. See Memorandum of Law in Support of Authority, Grand Jury, dated January 9, 2017, attached. We the people called forth the first known grand jury and succeeded, Magna Carta. We the people declared our independence and succeeded, Declaration of Independence. We the people formed committees of safety through which we defeated tyrants and won our independence. We the people wrote, ordained, and established the Constitution, Anti-Federalist Papers. We the people will succeed in returning law and order back in our courts. Amendment 6 protects the unalienable rights to have the assistance of counsel. Not a required bar attorney, which was not found in America until the early 1900s. In short, we the people are the authors of law and creator of the United States of America, not the arrogant bar. Bar tort attorneys will try to arrogantly claim that we the people have no standing in their courts. In law, standing or locus standi is the term for the ability of a party to demonstrate to the court sufficient connection to and harm from the law or action challenged to support that party's participation in the case. We the people have never been more harmed. See Memorandum of Law in Support of Standing dated April 17, 2017, attached. In criminal cases, courts proceed under unconstitutional statutes and give the appearance of proceeding in the name of the people. Example, people or United States versus individual or group, when in fact they represent the will of the government and or corporate America, but never the people. These courts operate lawlessly in jurisdictions unknown. They give the appearance of a jury indictment and jury trials, while the judges and prosecutors stack and corrupt the juries by leading them to believe statutes are law and that they must follow the strict interpretation of the law as defined by the prosecutor to indict and the judge to convict. Any jurist that tries to nullify the law is threatened with criminal charges. The whole process is orchestrated to achieve the desired outcome that serves the status quo of corporatism and not justice. See Memorandum Jury Tampering and Stacking, dated January 9, 2017, attached. The United States of America was founded upon the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, and the Bill of Rights. See Memorandum of Law in Support of Understanding our Founding Documents, dated January 9, 2017, attached. These three documents define American law founded under natural law, lex naturale, the law of nature, jus naturale. It is absolute law, the true and proper law of nature, also known as common law, as distinguished from the law created by the enactment of legislators. See Memorandum of Law in Support of the Common Law, dated April 17, 2017, attached. The purpose of this extraordinary proceeding is to open and reestablish Article III courts, thereby returning justice to the federal district courts. See Memorandum of Law in Support of Article III courts, dated January 9, 2017, attached. The plaintiffs are the assembly, of We the Sovereign People, the authors of all law by right of the Covenant of 1776, Government by Consent, 1789, Ordained by the People, and 1791, Declaratory and Restrictive Clauses added to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers. See Statements of Jurisdiction dated December 13, 2016, attached. We're going to have to correct this paragraph, Jan, because we've got to make it clear right. that we're not coming in as the plaintiffs, but we're coming in as the next friends to the plaintiffs, which we do right. add on, but this paragraph seems to confuse that. So we'll fix that paragraph. This is a necessary extraordinary criminal action concerning subversion by enemies both foreign and domestic within our government, including our federal judiciary. We the people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of persons themselves entrusted to dispense justice. See Jurisdiction Notice to Magistrate dated January 5, 2017, attached. The unalienable right of the sovereign people to self-governance was ordained by God, established in the Declaration of Independence, and ordained by we the people, who are the authority of all law. See Memorandum in Support of Jurisdiction, dated January 13, 2017, attached. It has been our experience. We may want to clarify that a little more, because we're not the author of all law, but we are the author of the Constitution. We're the lawmakers for the government. All law for the government. Maybe that's what we have to put in there, for the government. Let me make a note there. Because natural law is written by God, we have no say in that matter. It has been our experience, and we have much evidence to produce, that both the federal and state judiciaries are at war with the Constitution and we the people, and are engaged in covering up murder, torture, manipulating evidence, witnesses, and juries in order to incarcerate innocent people who are a threat to exposing judicial and law enforcement corruption and RICO on a national level. Conspiracy to supplant the law of the land with statutes, thereby replacing our republic with corporatism. Incarcerating and or covering up murder of inventors who are a threat to corporate profits. Denying due process, robbing people's homes and estates. Taking people's children, debtors' prison, covering up and protecting pedophile rings, etc., etc., and etc. We the people have filed informations, demands to obey the law. We have delivered scores of habeas corpuses, information, non-judicial foreclosures, show causes, and indictments that have been methodically removed and concealed and ignored in our supposed Article III federal district courts. Therefore, we the people opened this court of record, which will proceed as an Article III court where the grand jury will take its proper role as sureties of the peace, not plaintiffs, but next friends on behalf of the plaintiffs. In other words, the people versus tyrants. To ensure justice through criminal indictments and trials, we will call forth untainted juries and prosecute. On May 1, 2017, President Donald J. Trump made the following proclamation. Today we celebrate Law Day, as we have since President Dwight D. Eisenhower first commemorated it in 1958, and reflect upon our great heritage of liberty, justice, and equality. Our founders risked their lives, fortunes, and sacred honor to defend of these values. More than 240 years ago, they set pen to paper and declared to the world that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence thus set our nation on its revolutionary and transformative path to protecting people's interests, to protect people's inherent individual rights and liberties from the tyranny of an elite few who might use the powers of the state to trample upon them. To protect the values for which they fought, the framers of our Constitution created a government of limited and separate powers that enabled the rules of law to prevail over the whims of government officials. As the great Justice Anton Scalia frequently observed, every dictatorship has a Bill of Rights, but paper rights alone will not preserve liberty. It is our Constitution's clear division of the sovereign powers, vesting the powers to create laws in the Congress, the power to execute laws in the President, and the power to interpret laws in the independent judiciary that enables us to remain free and in control of our government. And we have to correct the President on this, because they're not here to interpret law. They're here to enforce and the law. And really, it's American jurisprudence is where they are supposed to respond from. And but in any event, now, therefore, I, Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America, in accordance with Public Law 87-20, as amended, do hereby proclaim May 1st, 2017, as Law Day, USA. I urge all America, including government officials, to observe this day by reflecting upon the importance of the rule of law in our nations and displaying the flag of the United States in support of this national observance. In witness thereof, I have hereto set my hand this first day of May in the year of our Lord 2017, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 241st, Donald J. Trump. We have been sharing our court papers with President Trump while he was campaigning and after his election as president. We have watched his first 100 days of office and have thus far concluded that he is a patriot and genuinely believes in the preservation of government of the people, by the people, and for the people through the law. Now, of course, we made the point thus far. So far, he seems to be doing the right thing, as long as he maintains that path. But if he gets off that path, we have to come down as hard on him as we do on any judge or anyone else. President Trump, after choosing Jeff Sessions for Attorney General, said he will be a great protector of the people. On February 9, 2017, Attorney General Sessions then took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. As aforementioned, President Trump rededicated himself and his administration to the rule of law, and therefore we will be sending a copy of these papers to Attorney General Sessions and President Trump for action. We will call upon Attorney General Sessions to send U.S. prosecutors educated in the common law to work with the common law grand jury to prosecute our indictments in this court of record, which will be the beginning of restoring justice in our courts. America will never be great again unless America is just, and America will only be as just as its justice system, which presently is a den of thieves. Sealed and dated May 8, 2017. Of course, we're going to change that date when we actually mailing day. Now, the memorandum, just to go through these really quickly, what we were copying, as we just mentioned, the Attorney General and the President, And the memorandum of laws are as followed. Let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There are 11 memorandums. And when we started to pursue, and when we opened this case and started filing papers into this court, we very specifically were thinking on how we can explain things and lay out the law and show all the proof of everything we need to show of what law is and the unalienable rights of we the people and what a constitutional court needs to be and should be. So we've been writing all these memorandums over the past, I don't know, 6 months or so, maybe more. Some of them are a few months older than that, but, you know, over the past 6 months or so. And all with the focus and intention on eventually writing this paper to kind of sew it together, to bring it together, to make the point of what this case is really all about. It's about subversion. It's about the fact that these people have taken control of our courts, and they've become courts of injustice, not courts of justice. And so these memorandums, again, I'm just going to read the list very quickly. Memorandum of Law in Support of the Second Amendment. Memorandum of Facts. Memorandum of Law in Support of the authority of the Grand Jury. Memorandum of Law in Support of Standing. Memorandum of law concerning jury tampering and stacking. Memorandum of Law in Support of Understanding our Founding Documents. Memorandum of Law in Support of the Common Law. Memorandum of Law in Support of Article III Courts. Statement of Jurisdiction. Jurisdiction Notice to Magistrate. Memorandum in Support of Jurisdiction. Okay, so all of these memorandums is meant to be read with this paper. Even though they were written early before this paper, we now have pulled all that information. This is what we've been working for and writing all these papers to build this case, to make the point. This is how this case is going to go forward and why, and by what authority and what the law actually is. Now, again, if anybody has any comments or ideas or thoughts on this paper on how we might be able to make it better, maybe some changes of some words, we will correct the two errors that we found in here, or anything to help make this much clearer of what it is we planning on doing with this case, you know, we're going to take those questions when we open up for Q&A. And if anybody would like to talk with us, you know, later, tomorrow, whatever, they can get a hold of me, Jan, or Gerard. I'll be available tomorrow till about 2 o'clock, and then I'm going to be gone. I have to go out of state for a few hours, but I'll be back tomorrow night. Tomorrow is Tuesday, yeah. So Wednesday I'll be back available. But Jan's available, Gerard's available. I don't think that these papers are going to go out before Thursday or Friday. So we've got a couple of days, but we're going to try to finish the perfection of these papers and get this all together by the end of the week, file this in the court. Now, we did file a response to the clerk, the U.S. attorney, which just wrote a letter to dismiss. I mean, these people are ridiculous. At this point, you know, he didn't respond, and therefore the clerk has defaulted. And as a matter of fact, I think, I have to go through and check the timeline, but I think the governor and the two houses here in New York also defaulted, you know. They responded with a letter concerning a paper that didn't bring them into the court case yet. They were just being copied as a matter of information. And so they were being put on a record for information. There's no wherefore clause. There was no response necessary for them or anything. And, of course, we know this attorney general here in New York. We know exactly what he was going to do. This was no surprise. We could have wrote the papers for him, as a matter of fact, and probably did a better job for him, as a matter of fact. But no way could he come up. You know, again, they go back to this no standing. Clearly, this attorney general for New York State did not read these papers. Clearly, they didn't read our response to their letter. Otherwise, they would have responded already to say, oh, wait a second, we have no standing in this case now, because they failed to respond in time. Now, again, I got to check the days and count them. We may be a few days off, but if they haven't defaulted yet, it's going to be a few days. So now they have a chance. They're hearing. Hopefully they're listening in, and hey, maybe they'll respond, because I'd love to see their response. We can tear whatever response up that they have easily. Of course, they'll always respond the same way. They won't read. We have no standing. We have no authority. We're nobody. And we can't come in and represent the people. So that's their position. And they have no other position. They cannot defend their position. So, okay, so that brings us to the end of this. So, again, when we get into Q&A, we'll open up for anybody with comments or some thoughts. Yeah, Gerard.
I'm going to make a comment before anybody.
Okay, well, I'm just about done with this paper before we move on, so make your comment.
I just wanted to say I would leave everything in there. You said you're going to cut that part short where you were quoting the Bill of Rights. And the reason I would leave it in there...
Oh, no, we're not going to cut that short. We made the point that we are here as the sureties of peace. We're here as the next friend of the people. We are the grand jury. We're not the defendant. I mean, we're not the plaintiff, okay? We are the people versus them. I got to make that a little clearer in that paragraph because the next paragraph or two later, we make it clear that we're here to represent the people who have been suffering these terrible things. And we made a list of these things, and we're ready to go forward in the court with most of these cases. We can prove that they have covered up murder. We can prove that they have been torturing the prisoners. We can prove all the stuff that we've got. We've got all the proof already, and we're going to get more. So, I mean, and this is almost endless. I mean, we have lots of people that are starting to come to us for foreclosure problem. And so we're going to have a lot more show causes and a lot more cases coming in from that perspective. We're going to go after, you know, we talked about debtor's prison here. Well, where is the debtor's prison? If you go to an IRS court, that's what that's all about, debtor's prison. Okay, and we're not even indebted to these people. You know, it's all, the whole thing is a fraud. But anyway, we're just going to correct it. We're not going to pull those out.
No, you were quoting a piece of the Bill of Rights, and you said, well, maybe I won't go all the way, quote the whole thing. And the reason I think it's important to quote everything in full is you can look at not for these judges. This paper needs to go to those people out west that are in court right now. This is going to resonate with them because they just went through all this crap. This is prophetic that the timing on this, look at when they read this, they're going to go, yeah, that's me. And they need to take this thing and go, look at our case is in this case. You need to answer that case because that's what you did to us. That's what's going to go viral here because when they read this, you see, people are ignorant. They don't go to court. They don't know what's going on. All those people out there know what's going on, and it stings them right now. And this is perfect because when they read this paper, they're going to feel empowered. And so,
well, let me just read that part that you're talking about, and then I'll let you continue. And
okay,
I think you're right. I was misinterpreting it as I was reading. No, I think it is perfect, and it was ending this way.
They don't read the Bill of Rights, so this is instructive for them. Let them hear those words because many of them have never read all the way through it. And they're going to be surprised. When they hear these things, they'll be hearing them for the first time, and it's going to affect them, okay? So that's just my thought on that, that this is
well, let me just
more
read those last few sentences that you were talking about. So that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it and to institute new servants, laying its foundation on the Declaration of Independence. We wanted to make it clear that we're not creating no new Declaration of Independence. We're not creating no new Constitution. We're resurrecting that which has already been established, that which has already been ordained. So anyway, let's see. The Institute of New Servants laying on a foundation on the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, and its capstone Bill of Rights that rests upon such principles and organize its powers in such form as to them shall seem likely to affect their safety and happiness. Yeah, I think that is appropriate. We're not going to change that.
It's powerful.
Go ahead.
So I just think that they're going to, if they look at this and they read it, they're going to have their Helen Keller moment. And they're going to realize that, you know, some of the criticism we got as NLA, they said, oh, you're going in their courts. Oh, you're doing this. And you got a social security number, they're not going to listen to you, and blah, 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 blah. And there's all this stuff about the fiction, and they didn't think we were addressing it. This paper makes it clear that we're addressing it. It makes it clear what our motives were, and it also makes clear the remedy of what we're doing and our plan. So this lays it all out. I mean, I don't see how they can't get behind it. I mean, they would. I mean, it's so clear with this paper.
And well, and those memorandums express it in much more clarity and in a much deeper way, because we get into each of these issues. I mean, each one of these memorandums are about 6, 7, 8, 10 pages long. Some maybe even longer. And it's all about laying out the founding papers, the founding, the arguments to bring us to where we're at as America, how we got here, natural law, or shall I say common law, and you know, just quotes of law that we were created under and by. But go ahead.
So if they're smart, they will read this, take our case, and the judge won't let them talk about anything. So what they can do is quote our case in their case and say, hey, you got a case that you need to answer that answers this very issue that I'm making that you won't let me speak about. And it's NLA case, paper, page, memorandum of law, pop, 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 pop. And until you answer that, I'm putting that in. You have to answer me. You have to answer the sureties of the peace. You see how powerful it is? They're in court. We're in court. We can support each other. They could refer back to this paper and say, look, you got an answer that you haven't answered yet. You're telling me to shut up. And you got the common law grand jury telling you that you need to answer the same thing. What's going on here? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful.
All right. Well, anyway, this paper, which will be filed this week, definitely by Friday the latest, but might go in Thursday. But again, we're going to look a little more, and anybody got any ideas, we're going to listen. The other thing is, I've already started organizing all of the paperwork for a lot of these cases. We have the Bundy Ranch problem situation. We have the murder or assassination of Lavoy Finnegan. That case is pretty much prepared and ready to go. I mean, we have to write the paper. It may take a couple of days to write the paper, but we have all of the evidence, all of the information, which we're going to start piling up on our top of our website and filing in the courts. We also are going to go after these judges and in the Hammonds case. I know the Hammonds want us to keep a nose out of things, but we can't. You know, they've asked many people not to get involved. They just want to do their time and get out because they want to go home to their families, and they're being abused and threatened and so on, tortured and so on. Maybe at the moment they're not being tortured, but if anybody started to come up to defend them, they knew that's what was going to happen. But we're going to bring these cases in. We have to. We have a duty to do so. And we're going to make the point concerning the threat upon these people, because we're going to look for justice and they're going to threaten these people and subject them to different tortures and so on. And we're going to be watching and these people are going to pay for this. But anyway, you know, we have the Hammond case, we have the Bundy case, we have the Robinson case, we have Wildlife Preserve case, we have, of course, I mentioned before, Lavoy Finnegan assassination. We also have a case that we can build, and I think we have enough information. We've got to get a little more maybe, but we have enough to go forward with and start the case on spying on the people, on the American people. We also can show subversion clearly, and by many of these people. We also are going after, you know, we're filing all these different cases with the habeas corpuses that they've been ignored. Due process. We have 30 some odd cases of due process across the nation in various federal courts, clear violations of due process of law. We have cases where we can show where the judges have said, don't bring the Constitution into this court. You can't quote it. You can't bring it up. And many other things. We also have all of these foreclosures, these non-judicial foreclosures, whether they be by the mortgage companies or in rem non-judicial foreclosures, by the county's tax foreclosure cases. You know, again, we have easily 100 plus cases ready to go into the courts. I mean, we're going to be writing for the next couple of months, putting case after case after case after case. I mean, we just want to overwhelm this thing. Anybody who knows, who has a case that wants to get into this, that has to do with denial of jurisdiction, a denial of due process, unlawful imprisonment, any of those things, if they want to write an affidavit, we'll start getting those cases in too. We want to go for the big cases. There's a lot of people out there that have done a lot of research. We probably should try to connect with Alex Jones's people and see if they'll work with us, because they've got so much evidence compiled that they can help us to bring this evidence into this court case. But any group or any individual or group of people that have been gathering information concerning subversion, you know, that would like to involve themselves with us, get a hold of Jan, and then we'll try to set up a conference and take a look to see how we can do these things. But we really need these people who have done a lot of investigation. We need them to really put the case together for us as far as the facts are concerned. We can then take that and put the law and write the papers to get it into the court. And then they've compiled all the evidence. So they can give us the evidence and kind of write the case for concerning the facts. Affidavits will really expound upon this, and that's the key to any court case is affidavits. So we'll just compile them and keep adding and adding. We're just going to overwhelm them. The president's going to get them. The attorney general is going to get them. And we need to think, you know, look, at when it comes to the government on the federal case level, when you go up after the government on the federal level, there's a requirement of giving them 60 days to respond. That's not so much on the state level, at least I've never seen that, but on the government, on the federal level, that is what's required. It's usually 30 days or 20 days, depending on how you serve the person. But if you're going after, someone who is elected, appointed, or employed by the government, you have to give them 60 days. But we're not going to give Jeff Sessions 60 days to make his decision. We have to think about how much time. I don't think he should be thinking at all. I think the day he gets our papers and reads this, he should be on the phones or trying to get connect with us, discover what he can do to help fix this problem and assist the people with this subversion, with these tyrants, with these tyrants who have seized control of our judiciary and have taken us into jurisdictions unknown. So that's what we need to do. That's what he needs to do. But we got to think about it. I'm thinking 10 days, which I think is too much time. Anybody drags their feet on this, 10 days just isn't enough time. They should be communicating immediately with us. But we'll see. We're definitely not going to give them 30. Clearly, we're not going to give them 60. We're not going to allow that. But meanwhile, we will be piling these cases on. The very next case that we're going to bring in is the active case out there west, which is the Bundy case, which we're going to get, an update on that tonight. But we want to bring that Bundy case in. We also know that the Wildlife Preserve case is still active, too, because I don't know where they're at with those other people that they are going to try to convict. But again, those are the first two cases we want to try to get in. We will be constantly filing the non-judicial foreclosure cases almost immediately. I think this week we're going to try to file two of them into our court case. Also, I think, which is going to be very quick, is also the habeas corpus, is the lack of due process, the proof of conspiracy. I mean, there is collusion from one federal district to another federal district. The way they have handled our habeas corpus has been exactly the same in every single court system. I mean, that can be nothing short of collusion, nothing short of conspiracy. That in itself proves conspiracy. And that they've removed or concealed our papers. All right, anyway, anything else, Gerard? Got to hit the mute button. Okay, I guess nothing else. All right, I guess we'll move on. Let me see where we're going to go from here. Huh?
I said I'm good.
Okay. You found the mute button, huh?
Yeah, my mouse wouldn't just want to go there. He thought
right.
It was a trap.
Okay, well, hopefully people understand how we're doing this and what we're doing, and everybody really needs to understand this. because the day is going to come when we're going to require the people to take a stand and step up. We're not going to expect people from California to travel New York, but we clearly expect people from Jersey and Connecticut and the New England states here and clearly New York to come to this court case when it's necessary to make a stand in numbers in people and overwhelm this system. But we also want to take on lots and lots of cases, but we're going to need assistance in writing a lot of this stuff. So hopefully the people who will be bringing this up have some experience to be able to at least write a good affidavit with and clearly lay out the facts of a case, you know, methodically, and then we'll take it and bring it into the case. Okay, let's see where we go from here. Before we go over to announcements, do we have any questions, Jan, or any questions laying around?
We have a whole bunch of questions.
Uh-oh. Well, hopefully we can make them short. Go ahead. Let's go through them as quick as we can.
I can if you can. First question. Lawfully, should convicted federal prisoners be interred in Washington, D.C.?
Should convicted... What's this? What's the question?
Federal prisoners be interred or housed in Washington, D.C.?
Look, there should be no such thing as a federal prison from my perspective. There's a prison in every county. And if it's necessary to imprison people, and I would think 90% of the people in prison don't belong in prison. That's my opinion, very strong opinion. As far as the county prisons, probably 98% of the people in those prisons don't even belong there. So we've got plenty of room in the county jails. This is a, if a person is to be convicted and tried, if the person is to be tried in within a federal district or in a particular county, that's where they need to be housed if prison is a requirement for some reason. I would imagine a violent crime. It's not right to drag people all the way on the other side of the country where they have no access to any support of their families. We also have to set up something to really re-educate these people. We shouldn't put people in a box and like a dog and throw in a couple of bowls of food and water and expect them to come out 20 years later and to act like a human being, because they're going to act like an animal. You treat them like an animal, they're going to act like an animal. These people need to be dealt with compassionately on one hand, and again, if prison is a necessity, we have to really rethink and think about that. But if it is a necessity, it needs to be done, without abuse, and it also needs to be done with the anticipation of trying to save these people, in the sense of coming back into society at some point in time, and giving them access to their families. Their family deserves the access to these people, separating these people. I don't understand a federal prison. It doesn't even make sense to me. So every county has a county jail. We don't need any more jail. Everything else should be shut down.
Good.
Well, I'm back if anybody has missed me.
What's that?
I say I'm back if anybody has missed me.
Oh, we missed you.
We all missed you, Robert.
All right, what's the next question? We'll be getting to you, Robert, in a minute or two, hopefully.
Okay, well, they tried to silence me.
Hmm. Oh, again.
For shame. Okay.
Go ahead, Jan.
How does...
Playing on the floor in the kitchen, right, Robert? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that.
Yeah. Okay, how does the show cause stop a sheriff's sale in 18 days?
It may or may not. We're going to do a show cause. We're expecting to put the judge we're putting the judge on call here. He has to respond because there is no due process here. The individual can take a copy of these papers over to the sheriff and let the sheriff know that this has been gone into the federal courts and this judge has been called out to show cause by what authority he thinks he can act without judicial process, without due process. And again, if they do, and we're going to offer him, look, all he has to do is recognize the error of his way. I'm talking about the judge, if there's a judge involved. And in all cases, there are. They're either silently in the background, or they actually, in a couple of cases, we're finding out, do put their names on papers. That's rare, though. But look, at all they have to do is respond with, hey, you're right, I made a mistake, I apologize, and restore the individual. It means call off the sheriff and get rid of the paperwork. If these people want to try to take these homes away from these people, they need to do it through due process in a proper jurisdiction, in a court of law. They need to do it properly. They don't do it properly because they cannot take these homes away from these people. They don't have the contracts. They don't have the papers. They don't have any affidavits. They have no proof of claim. They have no fiduciary authority. They have nothing. And so, therefore, go away. So if these people's houses are removed before we can get these answers and things taken care of here, we're suspecting that they are going to default because they can't answer the questions. And once they default, the wherefore clause will take it back for an order of the court to restore these people. So if the sheriff takes it away, he's going to have to bring it back. Now, that, of course, is all supposing that we get this court open and going. There's a lot of opportunity here. We see what's going on in the last 100 days of the Trump administration. We see what's going on with him. He's constantly talking about the law. I wouldn't say constantly, but often he talks about the law and being obedient to the law. We're laying this out. We're teaching the president, we're teaching the president about the law. I think our papers are educating him. And so if Sessions doesn't do the right thing, we're going after the president to get rid of this guy and get someone who's going to be obedient to the law and keep his oath. And if we have to, we'll go after the president. If we fail there and we're unable to put the pressure on the president to do the right thing and whoever he puts in, if not Session, as the attorney general, we're unable to do that, our plan still continues. It still mounts up and still continues to grow and go. Remember, we're looking for critical mass. We may be close enough to critical mass by this opportunity here. And if we can really get a big splash going, we will hit critical mass at the same time we have consideration from the Attorney General as far as U.S. attorneys are concerned. And that's kind of where we're at. If people, even people who have already lost their homes, okay, if they lost them through non-judicial foreclosures, they can fill out the paperwork, write up an affidavit, bring it together. We'll file it in our court case with us. We will act as their next friends on their behalf in the court to retrieve their home. And in most cases, again, once we can get prosecutors, then these cases are going to go very quickly. They're either, again, they're going to repent and fix the problem, or they're going to default because they can't answer, and we'll get it back through the default. The court order will require the home to be returned. So that's kind of where we're at. I mean, again, we're doing the best we can from our level. It's an uphill battle. I think we have a good plan. If anybody can add to this plan, by all means, we're listening. But go ahead, Jen.
Okay. On December 26th, 2016, on the Monday night call, you spoke at length about Forms 56 and 4490. You mentioned the Federal Rules of Civil Procedures. Could you be more specific what rule or chapter in that publication speaks about requirements for these two forms in the courts?
Well, in any court, and there must be an affidavit. If there's no sworn affidavits, there is no court. I mean, that's a requirement to open a court case. You have to have a sworn affidavit. Someone has to get up and swear something against you or whatever it is that they're doing, okay? And in the case of a government, especially acting under in rem, okay, and this is a process in rem, okay, any act in rem where they're going after the item and not the person, that of course is the law at sea. But if you read through, I'm dying to do a paper, but it's going to take a lot of research and studying to go through the federal rules to really lay this out. But in my reading through the federal rules, it became very clear to me that this in rem process of taking property, the government taking property away from the people, is weaved everywhere. And in the law of the land and everything else, they even make the date. There's a rule in there that if you do not challenge the authority of fiduciary authority, if you do not challenge their authority or challenge the fact that there is no proof of claim, if you don't do that within, I think, 10 days after your first court hearing, then you can no longer bring those issues up. You're stuck in the court and you can't require it. Of course, that in itself is a fraud. And I'd like to write a paper and lay that out and show how that works through the federal rules. The whole thing is fraudulent. Those federal rules are terrible and are written by the courts to begin with. You know, we have Bill Clinton and what was that other woman that died that was his, his secretary, Bill Clinton's secretary?
Janet Reno.
Okay, Janet Reno and Bill Clinton wrote, the questionnaire for, I think it was the questionnaire, or the handbook, wrote the handbook for the jurors, okay? We did a paper on that. Hopefully we got that in here. I'm pretty sure we did. Hang on a minute. Let me take a real quick look. You can read the paper that we wrote on this. This was, Memorandum of Jury Tampering and Stacking, okay? Read that paper, and we lay out exactly the fraud involved here and the manipulation of the court and how they're manipulating these people and stacking the juries. But in any event, where will we start? I ran off base here. Where will we go? What was the question again?
It was about the form 4490.
Oh, the forms, the two forms. Okay. So in order, when at sea, this is all starts at sea, okay? You're at sea and the government chases these pirates and they're able to seize their ship. They may not seize all the pirates. They may not seize any of the pirates. They may not seize the owner of the ship, which is a pirate. But they seize the ship, okay, at sea. When they bring it into port, they have to first file a proof of claim and fiduciary authority over that. And they do that using the law at sea, okay? And it's basically, it's an affidavit of the story of what happened and that they seized this ship of piracy and so on and so forth. An action in rem is a process where you're passing by due process and seizing the item without going after the owner. Mostly, of course, because it was in a crime, and in this case, piracy. Now, they have moved all that onto the land, and they use that process. The IRS exclusively runs under that process. And let me explain very quickly how that works. When the IRS gives you what's called a notice of lien, and I've heard this argument, I've listened to a lot of people talking about this, and when I started studying and I realized nobody really understands what's going on here, they're missing the point. They talk about the fact that this is only a notice of lien. There is no lien. Now, they're looking for the lien in the county because that's where the papers are filed in the county with the county clerk. And the sheriff comes out, of course, and seizes the property through that process because a notice of lien was filed. Now, it used to be where the lien itself had to be filed in the county, too. Somehow they got away with that all around. Everywhere in the nation, they get away with that. You see, what they're saying, what they're really saying, is that they're giving you a notice that a lien exists in the federal district. So you go to the federal district court, and you go to the records, and you can look up and get the copy of your lien, which should have attached to it. In order for it to be liened, it must be fiduciary authority and a proof of claim, okay? So that's what that paper is saying, okay? The fact of the matter is there is no filing in the federal court. I have not found any anywhere. I know when they came after me with mine, they didn't have it. That's how I beat the case. So when you go into before the federal judge and you say, Your Honor, this is only a notice of lien. There is, this is not a lien. This is a notice of lien. And the other side will say, well, that's true, Your Honor. It's a notice of lien. They don't take it any further than that. And the judge has the ability, because you didn't bring it up and challenge the 56 and the 4490, and you can go and Google those two, Form 56 or Form 4490. You'll pick them up immediately, PDF forms, and you read through it and you see what they are. Since you're not challenging that directly, and they're saying, and they're claiming, yeah, we did serve a notice of lien, and so it's a play on words, and the judge now has a place to hang his hat because you're not saying, well, I haven't seen no documentation, I haven't seen these forms, I haven't seen fiduciary authority, I haven't seen a proof of claim. So since you don't challenge that, the court moves on. And once 10 days goes beyond that court that hearing, it's over. You don't have, according to their rules, which again is fraud anyway, you could still beat it. But according to their rules, they try to tighten it up and say, you can't bring it up anymore once 10 days has passed. If you discover the truth, you can't bring it up. But that again is fraud on the court and so on and so forth. So those two documents, and they don't have to be those documents per se. You know, they have to be an affidavit proving claim and an affidavit proving that you have fiduciary authority over that item, that estate, or whatever it is. In the case of foreclosures, tax foreclosures, over that property and house. All right, next question.
Okay, can you say a few words about the meaning of equal protection under the law?
Equal protection under the law. What is there to say? Everybody needs to be equally protected by the law. I don't know. I don't understand. They'd have to clarify more what they're asking. I don't understand what they're asking.
Okay, moving rapidly
Brent,
along.
Do you understand what that question is? Can you respond to that?
Credit. Maybe they mean full faith and credit, where what's given in one state is available to the other state.
Oh, that's
what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you have an unalienable right in one state, you have an unalienable right in every other state. And so if one state recognizes your unalienable right, like carrying a weapon without a permit, let's say, and you go to a state that requires a permit, the full faith and credit must be given to that individual. Of course they don't do that. And of course they will put you in jail and convict you, and it's just another, you know, another lawless process. So, but again, we need to deal with that too, and that's what we're dealing with here in New York State. You know, again, I think they've defaulted. I'll have to go look to count the days, but if they've defaulted, there's a whole new change in New York, isn't it? So we'll have to figure that out, how that works. Again, it's an uphill battle, but anyway, that must be what they mean.
Okay. This next one, I'm not sure it's really a question or just a statement. In a municipal corporation charter, you can file a lawsuit against the municipality only if you show injury or damage caused by the corporation. On the other hand, a municipal corporation is exempted from showing injury or damage caused by the accused.
Well, again, I understand what they're talking about because they pulled that also on us numerous times in the beginning. You know, the municipality, you got to get permission to sue the municipality.
Right.
And you got to do this first and that first and the other thing first. We just went straight to the Supreme Court, and we've always beat that one. They've never really been able to. They've always had the standing thing, and we never researched standing enough to understand that, of course, we have standing. It's a ridiculous thing. But one of the things that these courts, these judges do, and the courts do, is they don't really, it's not until they've made the decision and the judge comes out and decides that you don't have standing, and then you come and think about it, and, you know, it's over. You know, how do you battle it? Of course, you could take it through the appellate system. But again, if you came in originally as a court of record and you didn't get your jury, which we've always done that, and on the one hand, you know, you don't have to go through any appeals court or anything. You go right into a federal court for violating an unalienable right, okay? In this case, a right of standing. But I've never really looked too deep into it. I don't know why we didn't, but when I did, and we wrote a memorandum on it, it's clear. We, the people, have standing. We can show very easily we're affected by anything our government does when it violates an unalienable right. Clearly we have standing. But anyway, next.
Okay, the next might be just a statement in regards to the feds stacking the juries.
Just say one other thing. We've read a lot of these statutes, which are very strange because some of them seem to come from the county and not from the state. I don't even know who writes these things. I guess there's a county legislator. There are county legislators, aren't there, Gerard?
Some counties, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they can come up with legislation.
Counties,
I mean, they can come up with...
Some counties have what they call Board of Supervisors, where the supervisor for every town sits on a board. But other counties have gotten rid of that, and they came up with their county legislators who make laws and things for the county. You know, in the past...
Right. Those people can only put together policies and procedures. And it can only identify and deal with those people who are elected or employed in some way for the state, the county, the village, the town, the county, whatever. They can't write legislation concerning the people, although they've abused that, and that's what they're doing, and they say it's law, and it's not law, it's no law at all, so that they've made these all these different things in order to prevent you from suing City Hall, so to speak. I remember when I was a kid, people saying you can't sue City Hall, you know. Well, why can't you sue City Hall, you know? Well, because they said so, period. I mean, that's absurd. It's just totally absurdities. So we've always ignored that and say poppycock and moved on, and they've never really given us a hard time on that one. But anyway, go ahead. What's next?
Okay. When did Congress vote to require counselors to be members of the bar to be able to prosecute cases in court or to argue?
Well, I don't think, you know, we're discovering, Brent has given us some information on that. Not all lawyers are bar taught. Not all lawyers are necessarily members of the bar. But there are other ways in some states, I guess, they have licenses. But generally, I know New York State and most other states that we know of, these quote-unquote licenses claim to come from the bar, when in fact that's only an association card to the bar, but they can't give you a license. You can't really get a license to practice law. Anyone can practice law. It is true there could be a problem, of course, people not educated and representing people, but I'll tell you what, a lot of these bar lawyers, they're not qualified to be lawyers either. They haven't got a clue in what they're doing, and they're really moronic, and I've seen some dumb stuff and no respect for papers and all kinds of things. So, but I mean, look, if you're going to get counseling, it's up to the person to look for the kind of counseling they want and to make sure that the person they get counseling from can give them the counsel they're looking for. So they have to have some kind of faith in that person. They have to look a little bit into their background. An education, of course, in that field is a good thing, and that should qualify people. But again, I know the Supreme Court has ruled that you can't license the right to right to practice law. You can't license that. It's an unalienable right to do what you want.
The way they got around it, John, is they require licenses for minors and, for lack of a better term, imbeciles. So when you hire a lawyer, what you're doing is you're saying, I'm an imbecile. And people are surprised when they get this lawyer that he doesn't let them talk, they can't put papers in, because by the very act of you hiring him, you're saying, I'm an imbecile, I need this guy to speak for me. So the license originally, because like you said, you can't license the practice of law except if the person is a minor or they can't defend themselves. So that's how they got away with it. And you contract into saying you're an imbecile when you hired a lawyer. I rest.
Yeah, that's one of the positions that I'm trying to think if it was the U.S. attorney. I think it was the U.S. attorney said that we didn't have the authority to represent. He said that we were an organization or something, and that we didn't have the authority to represent an organization, that you had to be an attorney. I think he used bar attorney, but he may not have, but he has spoke about being an attorney and so on and so forth. But of course, you know, and I understand they're misinterpreting or misunderstanding our papers, because they're not really First of all, they're ignoring. I don't think they're reading it anyway. But I think this paper that we just put together is clarifying that fact. We did do a, I think we did a memorandum. Let me think about this. We responded in a paper to him, the letter. In that letter, we laid out the fact that we are not the plaintiffs. We are not representing anyone, okay? We are the sureties of peace. We're the next friend to these people. And we're not going to prosecute the case. The grand jury is not going to do the prosecution. We're expecting the attorney general to give us U.S. attorneys to prosecute these cases. And if necessary, we'll look for other people to do it if they can't find us someone qualified under the common law. Someone who's going to, we're going to watch like a hawk in these cases, every one of these cases, and make sure that these people don't abuse what they're doing as far as prosecuting is concerned. I guess that's it.
Okay.
Any other questions?
A quick announcement. Decade or Captain John would like any NLA members who used to be able to dial in to our NLA calls as part of their cell phone plan with no additional charges, but who are now being told that NLA calls are outside of their plan and incur additional charges to make the call, please email Captain John at decape@hotmail.com. Apparently that's a scam they're running here.
Okay, we'll have to call up. Look, we need to call these people up. Maybe we'll try to do this tomorrow late morning, and we'll call up the conference call people, and let's talk to them about our problems, see what we can do. I hate to have to go back over to the HD because it's not really set up the way we like it, but
right.
Try to get that problem fixed. Maybe if I use the Explorer. When you tried to get that thing going, did you hit that button numerous times?
I hit it once and it did nothing. So I hit it again. Yep.
Okay, that may have been where your mistake might have been. For me, I stopped doing that, but I just totally freeze up. But remember, eventually yours did kick in, didn't it?
And the music eventually started.
You played the wrong thing, though. You were playing an old program instead of the music. So.
Yeah, I don't know how it did that.
Well, when you click on that tab and it opens up, the first thing you see are recordings.
Right.
Okay?
And then
you clicked on one of those recordings. You're supposed to click on a tab next to recordings that said uploaded files. And that's where the music is.
Okay.
So that's where you made the mistake. But anyway, let's fix that problem. And let's talk to them about that phone calling problem. Do we have his phone number that we can use to talk with these people as far as the area code is concerned?
Oh, yeah. We've got everything on Captain John. He's in our file.
Okay, so let's call tomorrow and find out what's going on, if that's true, and let's see what else we could do. You know, I'm almost tempted to go back to our original format. What was that we had?
Free conference call HD.
No, there was one before that we had, before this one, and we left because we kept bogging down or something. I forget, but that was a pretty good...
We were on Blog Talk for a while, John.
Blog Talk, that was it. Blog Talk was pretty good. And that did give us the opportunity for people browsing around looking for, programming and the opportunity to come and find our room that way, too. So maybe we should also broadcast through Blog Talk, as a secondary thing. We'll think about those things. But anyway, let's fix this problem with the phone if there is a problem. This is the first I'm hearing of this. Have you heard anything else from anyone else? And that's a question
I heard,
for people out there.
Yeah. Yep. One other comment I think I had on that, but you can email me or call me if you've had a problem.
If anybody that's on the call, if they want to get into the Q&A, if they want to report that kind of thing to us, let us know. But we'll look into it tomorrow. Okay, any other questions?
Okay, when doing paperwork for the courts and doing research for the same, once completed and added to a case, what then are judges and magistrates looking for? What source specifically are they looking at when reading and reviewing the submitted court case paperwork?
Well, that's a loaded question. Look, if you're doing something where you're expecting the judge to make a decision, usually contract, okay? So if you're going into a court and you're not looking for a jury and you want the judge to make some decision, there is kind of a criteria, a form that is normally a process that people follow and the courts like to see. We've put a paper, we put a book up there on National Liberty Alliance where we kind of laid out that format the way they like to see it. But the truth of the matter is, the only thing necessary to open a prima facie case is an affidavit. You don't really need anything more than an affidavit. That's your complaint. Now, of course, there is a way of writing papers and the wherefore clause. They do want to know what you're looking for, of course. But it starts off with an affidavit. So people can go up and download our book and a lot of information that we have learned from a lawyer on how to file papers, you know, how to write a paper and all of that format. But again, it really shouldn't be necessary, but the courts will push it and claim that it is necessary. And you know, you go into court, you got to be able to defend your case. You got to be able to articulate your position and make it clear. You need affidavits, obviously, and you need to challenge the other side. You have to recognize the fact that they are lacking themselves, you know. You have to understand that, you know, an affidavit unrebutted rules the court. Of course, these judges don't seem to understand that these days. Well, they actually do, but they don't care. They think you don't understand that. So how many times we see the other side never swear to anything, never say anything under a sworn paper, and yet and you coming in with affidavits and all this proof, and you still lose. So that's a problem. But anyway, that's all I have to say on that.
Okay. One could assume judges are looking at law reviews, sources of some sort, the latest supplements containing the most recent appellate decisions. But when you hear what really goes on in the courts and
yeah,
how
it's
we
all
the people
poppycock.
Are in this, like,
all of that yeah. is all of that is irrelevant, from my opinion. I'll never quote any of that stuff. I'll dismiss any of that stuff quoted. I don't care about other courts, what other courts have to say or anything. Look, at the bottom line is get and why is that? Because every case that we can battle, okay, if they become honest judges, and the judges actually become places where you can get justice, then you can come in with your facts, tell your story, and the judge will make a proper decision, you know, if you've chosen to go that route. If you ask for a jury, then, of course, they'll make the decision. But it really gets back down to the facts, okay? That's the ultimate thing. Who cares what an appellate judge says? They don't rule the court. Their decision doesn't make something right or wrong. You see, that's their form of common law. Collecting opinions of different, different courts. And for every court case you can do for one side, you can find another court case on the other side. So all that is irrelevant anyway. It should get back to the facts. But in our case, it's always the same thing. Due process, they don't give you the due process. Jurisdiction, they're in jurisdictions unknown. Okay, they have no authority to do these things. And the fact that we always push for a court of record, which requires a jury. So, anyway.
Okay. Can you say a few words about the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court of the United States? The things listed in the Constitution, such as counterfeiting, piracy, and so on, and how and why SCOTUS didn't really have anything to do when it came to making appellate decisions until the early 1900s?
Well, look, as far as the United States Supreme Court is concerned, they have appellate power over the decisions of judges. They have no appellate power over the decision of a jury. Once a jury makes a decision, it's final. Okay, they have no power or authority to overrule that. They can't second-guess it. There is no appeal. It's final, okay? Now, of course, if you can show that someone's unalienable rights was affected in some way by that, you know, for that particular part of the case, they could look into it. But really, the United States Supreme Court really is ruling over as an appellate court to the courts where a judge is in the process making a decision. You know, so you have that process of appealing, but it goes all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. United States Supreme Court can intervene or into any decision by any judge. So these are equity courts. That's where the United States Supreme Court has their real power and authority. They don't have their real power and authority in courts of records, only equity courts. You know, it's very important to understand that. I only recently came to a realization of that point of view. But that's the way it is. They can't act as an appellate court on any jury trial. So okay. why, when you have a court case and you're making an argument, the only ones I would quote is the United States Supreme Court, because they are usually on mark. You know, all the cases we've used anyway, they're right on point. And they're powerful. They're well thought out. Scalia has some really great decisions. And again, they're all in the equity courts. These decisions all come out of equity courts. But we can pull him over and use them because he's really laying out the law and really educating us in a proper conclusion through American jurisprudence, if properly done. I mean, there are some bad United States Supreme Court decisions, you know. I mean, one of the big one is the abortion, you know. That's one of the big problems. But anyway, what else?
Okay, I guess since Robert's back and I have no further questions, it's time for the Patriot Review.
Okay, Robert, you got the mic.
All right. Well, the enemy has tried to prevent me from speaking by forcing me to run from one computer to another trying to stay online. Last Wednesday night, guards at the Pahrump prison went to Ammon Bundy's cell. They placed him in leg irons, cuffed his hands behind his back, and they took him out of his cell. And they took him to the shower room, placed him in a 3x3 shower cage, and they began beating on him and laughing at him. And they told him that he was going to be there for 72 hours. Well, they dislocated his shoulder and his wrist. His hands were handcuffed behind his back. They beat him down to his knees. And I guess he was feeling like he was done in. They wouldn't give him anything to drink, nothing to eat in 13 hours. They kept him there beating on him for 13 hours. And in the meantime, the word got out through other inmates. The supporters began calling the sheriff and all the other people, and the sheriff had to send in a SWAT team in full tactical gear to rescue Ammon. They did that at the 13th hour. They filmed, the people at the prison filmed the whole incident. They were taunting him and laughing at him and beating on him. And And they watched him reset his own shoulder and taunting him.
Is there any way to get a hold of this film? Do we have any documentation on this or a combination of documentations from different people, whether it's sworn to or not?
I'm getting to that.
Okay.
But the supporters began calling everybody looking for help. They called the sheriff. They called everybody. Well, the sheriff at the 13th hour sent in a SWAT team in full tactical gear and rescued Ammon from this 3x3 shower stall that they had him in.
What prison is he in, by the way?
Pahrump, Nevada.
It's not a county prison, then.
That's a Nye County.
Yeah, but is it a county prison where the sheriff is in charge anyway?
No, it's a
federal
for-profit civilian prison.
Okay.
And the sheriff had to send in a SWAT team to rescue him. And they brought him out. He couldn't even stand up. He couldn't walk. He couldn't do anything. His legs were injured because of the leg irons being so tight. He couldn't raise his arms up over his head. He told his wife that probably, because they told him that he was going to be in there for 72 hours. No food, no water. He said if he had been in there for a full 72 hours, he probably would have died. And they had told him that he was in there for 72 hours or until he died, is what he was told.
Did they say why they were doing this?
Well, they made up an excuse. Now, when they came in Wednesday night, late at night. He had a shirt hanging up on the bunk. And I told him that wasn't proper, that wasn't legal. He said, why? And they said, because it's just against the rules. Well, it's something that all the prisoners do. They hang their shirts on the rack. And so it was just an excuse. Now, at that time, they took his shirt and was walking out with it. And Ryan Bundy grabbed it away from him. They put Ryan in isolation. They took Ammon down to the shower all handcuffed and with his arms behind his back and his shackles on his legs. And they beat him down to where he was on his knees. He couldn't get up. He couldn't raise his arms. They tore his arms out of his shoulder, dislocated his shoulder, and then laughed at him as he tried to reset it himself. They filmed it. And because other inmates was able to get the word out, patriots started calling the sheriff and all the other people. The sheriff sent in a SWAT team to rescue him at the 13-hour mark. They brought him out. He couldn't even stand up. He couldn't raise his arms. They stripped him of his clothes so they could examine his body. And then he was thrown into isolation cell, naked. One of the guards finally poked some underwear through a hole in the door to him. But people from all the western states once they got the word, they started converging on Nevada and calling everybody possible. The sheriff came out and talked to them and let them know what she was doing.
Why didn't now, do we know why the sheriff didn't take custody of them at that point?
Well, she did send the SWAT team in.
Yeah, but she should have taken them out of that prison.
She should have. There's no explanation of that yet.
What kind of documentation do we have on this?
She is doing an investigation into all of it. Now, she came out and talked to the Patriots on Saturday because the guards were telling the guys that they couldn't park where they were parking along the highway. She told them that they were just fine, that if they remained calm, that she had no complaint, that they were doing fine. And when she left, she was headed for the prison to follow up on the people's complaint more. And the Patriots began a march around the prison, which was 3 miles long. The guards called the city police and said that the Patriots were crossing the fence into the prison property. So the police came racing out with lights blaring and sirens and all, and fixing to arrest all the Patriots that were there, John Lamb and Kelly Stewart and all of them. And the sheriff popped up and said, "No, you guys stand down. I'm doing the investigation on this. Run the cops off." And she reviewed all the film that had been taken. On Sunday, she came back out and she told them, says, "You guys haven't done anything wrong. There's nothing wrong. If you had done something wrong, I'd have just warned you." Now, this sheriff, I've got to explain to what she looks like. She rides around being driven by a deputy. She looks like a lovable old grandma when you just see her riding in her oversized golf cart. But when she steps out, she's got a revolver in a Fastrel holster hanging low, strapped around her leg like an old cowboy, with the butt of the gun hanging out away from her waist at arm's length, ready for a fast draw. And I believe if anybody even flinched, they'd have had a bullet between their eyes with this woman. But she came out to talk to the people, and she's doing an investigation. I mean, she's just straight out of the Old West Tombstone. And she's trying to be neutral, but you can see that she's on the side of the cowboys. But
now, how do we know these facts? Is this something that Ammon told his wife, or how do we know these?
Well,
facts?
Ammon told his wife on the phone what happened, and so she sent out a video on it. Now, I sent that to Jan so that you could have a copy of it.
What kind of video?
Oh, well, it was I'm not sure what kind of video, but it was a video.
Is the video of the people outside the prison walking around, or is it the video?
No, it's a video of Ammon's wife telling the telling a story of what.
Okay, so everything you have told us is in that video?
Yes.
Okay, is there anything that you've told us that isn't in that video?
Well, I've sent several videos, and everything is in those videos.
All right. What I'll do is, Jen, we should review this video tomorrow morning. Drop it into my Skype, and I'll look at that video tomorrow morning. And if we can get anyone to write anything, and I don't even care if it's an affidavit, just write it and put their name on the end of it. That's good enough at this point. I think this is something we need to get into the court right away. We talked about torture, and this is torture. Anything
is
that puts stress upon the mind or the body is torture. And this is exactly some of the problems. We need this story in with what we're doing. And we're also, you know, I'd like to get the assassination of Lavoie in as soon as possible also. So I think we're ready on that. So murder and torture. Look, this has got to wake up the Attorney General. This has got to wake up the President. They have got to have compassion, and they've got to respond. They can't
I also today sent Jan some affidavits from the other prisoners
on this issue?
What had happened to them.
Okay, good. How many affidavits do we have?
Well, there's two or three of them on what I sent to Jan.
Okay. Jan, did you put this into my Skype yet?
That was this afternoon when I sent them.
Hey, Robert, wasn't there an elected official who was also looking into this? Didn't they get the attention of somebody out there that wants to?
Well, I've got, there's people from all the western states are out there. And they all converged on there. People are sending me updates. Now, the people in the county, the people in the town around there are supporting them. In fact, the people out there has been out there giving these supporters tents and food and sleeping bags and they've today delivered porta potties to them. They've delivered.
Do we have any names of these prison guards, whoever was on
yes,
yes.
We
on
got
duty.
Them. We have them. And we
okay.
also, the people around the county have also provided travel trailers with fully stocked for the people out there protesting for showers and to wash their dishes. They provided them with all the food to keep them going. The people are doing peaceful. They plan to be there as long as they need to be to bring attention to the abuse in the prisons. And we do have some names. They're on the videos on the information that I sent to John.
Does anyone know how to download a video off of Facebook? Can you download? YouTube, we can download videos, but notice on Facebook, we can't get these videos.
Well, I've been downloading off of Facebook and sending them to Jam.
How do you download?
Well, you click on the video, and it'll bring up where it says. It gives you a choice of three different things to click on for recording it and then sending it.
Yeah, well, send it where?
Well, I can send it to anybody I want to send it to.
Yeah, but it's still on Facebook. I want to get the video onto my hard drive. How do I do that?
Well, I can send you the video right off of Facebook.
And so when I click on the video that you send me, I'm going to have an MP3?
You can download it right onto your hard drive.
How?
Just by clicking on it and downloading it.
Well, you got a Facebook account, John?
Well, I'm in the... Yeah, I do, but I don't even know how to sign in for it.
Because you can't watch unless you got a Facebook account.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it now, so I must have...
Some of this I sent to Jan and to Gerard, and I also sent it to the page where for the Skype page where all of us are as a group on there.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm looking at these videos now. I see no way to download. I mean, maybe I'm missing something somewhere.
Just click on the video.
It's a Facebook URL.
Right click.
But I think you got to I think he has to be signed into his Facebook, or they won't open up. I don't know.
You can watch them, but you can't download them.
Right. See, it says update on Southern blah, blah, blah. It says www.facebook.com. And so then when you click on it, it brings you to that page. And the only way you're going to get to that page is if you do have a Facebook account.
Well, I'm logged in. I got an account. I'm logged in now. But I don't see any way to download this stuff. You know, a lot of their videos and stuff, they need to put them up onto YouTube or someplace where people can take them and use them.
If you right-click on the video, it'll give you a choice of, to...
Well, right-click says play, mute, or show video URL.
Unmute or show video URL. Now, you could give that video URL to anybody, but you can't really download. They got it locked pretty good.
We got to find a way to get these videos. Maybe there's a – I'll have to look. Maybe there's software where I can download video on a page or something. I don't know.
They try to hold
so tight on these things, Facebook and these different places. But anyway, it doesn't look good if you can't download.
On Skype, when the – if you just click on the video, it'll open up in the Facebook page.
Right, but it doesn't download.
And then use it like for the court case. And you can't
save
it.
There's no way to download it.
And look, at those things disappear too, after a while. Facebook takes them off or whatever, they disappear. So, John, they YouTube... download a YouTube downloader to get stuff off of YouTube. I don't know that Facebook has that. You could share it, but that's like sharing it through Facebook, I think, on a timeline or whatever, or share it to a page. But I'll bet you there's technology.
Look, this is what we got to do. Robert, I'm going to leave it up to you to do this. Find somebody or we need some documentation, and I don't care whether it's a sworn affidavit. We need something on paper to tell the story that you just told. If these videos are telling the stories, we need copies of these videos, because we will take that and we'll send it to the president. We'll put it in a case. We'll send a copy to the president and a copy to the attorney general.
We'll do a show cause going after
the individual. Listen, Robert, this is what we need. This is really upsetting to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people hearing this story. And I want to do something about this, and I want to do it now. I don't want to wait. I want to get it done this week. I don't want to do it a month from now. But look, what we need is I want to know whoever runs that prison. Okay, we want that person because they're accountable. We need to know who was on duty that night that would have to have allowed this to happen, or the names of some of these individuals that did this beatdown. We need all those people, and we need we're going to do a show cause. It's kind of a backwards way of doing things, but something where these people got to respond and answer in this court by what authority they think they can do this, and we're going to make the point that this is torture.
We have some of those names in the affidavits that I sent to Gerard and to Jan, and this has been going on for some time, and it's a woman in charge, and she's authorizing all of this stuff. And the other inmates now are willing to speak out on what happened to them. And so, I've sent some of that to Jan and Gerard today.
Now, the one I'm looking at right now, Robert, it says John Witheros or something like that, but it's way back from 12/2/13. Is that what one of them was?
I mean, those are affidavits from prior things that have happened.
Right.
And we'll take any affidavit. Anybody sends us an affidavit of being abused in prison, unlawfully imprisoned, I mean, all these things. We'll take those affidavits and we'll put them into the court. We're going to use that as proof. And we're going to go after these people. I mean, there's a lot to go after, but look, we need an army of prosecutors. We don't need just one prosecutor. We need an army of prosecutors. This is such a big situation, such a big problem when you put together all these cases. But
On Sunday, Nye County Commissioner came out and talked to the supporters out there, and he heard their stories, and he told them before he left that today he was headed into the prison to talk to Ammon about the abuse and to take a look at his injuries. Now, I don't have the word on the results of that yet, but I expect that tomorrow probably. And now when Ammon's attorney found out about it, he showed up on Friday at the prison and he had an audience with Ammon. But as soon as he demanded that Ammon pull up his pants leg for him to look at the injuries, the guards entered in and ended the visitation and took Ammon out and put him in isolation.
All right. Well, if we get this stuff together, we're going to put the sheriff on notice that they have a duty.
The sheriff is with them.
Yeah, look it. The sheriff has a duty to go in and take that man out of that prison. If she feels that she needs to continue incarceration for some reason or another, she could put him in the county jail. But she has a duty. We need to let her know she needs to do that. And if she fails to do that, anything happens, then she's going to be also responsible. And I know she's on our side and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, we can't pussyfoot around. It's time we got to stop this.
Well, they fully intended to kill Ammon. He was told after it was all over that the intent was to keep him in there for 72 hours or until he died. And he told his wife that he felt that if they had kept him for 72 hours, he would have died.
All right. We need the documentation. And
yes.
So, Jan, work with Robert, and let's get whatever videos, any kind of documentation. If there's affidavits, even if they're old affidavits of people writing stories about their abuse in prison, anything on this, we want it. We want the names of the whoever runs this prison. We want the names of whoever was on that night. We want the names, if we can get, of any of the individuals who performed the beatdown. We want all this information. We need the name of the sheriff. We need addresses of the court, address of the prisons, address of the court, all of it. Anything we can get. And anybody telling the story is coming in. Ultimately, we're gonna assume them as a next friend. And the grand jury doesn't have to have the sworn proof. They just have to have the story and they can act upon it.
Well, Redoubt News posted the story also, so Sherry...
Let's get a copy of that. How much detail did
Sherry Dovale posted that on her paper. And so I have a copy of that.
How much detail did they give? Did they give the whole story pretty good or what?
They did a pretty good job of telling the story.
Who's this where she says, locked in a shower cage by C over there to hide it? who in the past had encouraged prisoners to assault him, allowed and assisted a prisoner in throwing a urine chili pepper concoction in his eyes while he was naked, personally escorted prisoners to the shower cage and encouraged them to spit on him while he was sexually assaulted and retaliated against by NDOC officers for reporting several instances of CO misconduct. Other incidents of excessive force, CO Vanessa Hydett, CO Robert Baker, Officer Ed Mills, CO Ray, a whole list of names. Was this another prisoner given their story?
Yeah, this is an old 12-2-13.
Yeah, that's one of the previous stories, yeah. One of the affidavits. Yeah,
that's a lot of detail there, isn't it?
That's yeah. 4 years ago, yeah.
Could we, so what about, you said that they took videotape. Does anyone have that videotape or just that they know that
well,
we
the
know
sheriff
that they took
it? The sheriff was informed of the videotape. We don't know yet whether she has been allowed to see it or not.
Been allowed? She should walk in there and take it.
Yeah.
As far as I would be concerned, if I was sheriff, that's a crime scene. I'd be putting up ribbons and I'd be taking everything.
She does know that the guards are lying because after she left on Saturday, immediately the people began a march around the walls of Jericho, and the guards called the police saying that these protesters had entered inside the fence of the prison, and so the police came screaming out with their lights blazing and their sirens going and fixing to arrest all the protesters. And the sheriff showed up and told them to stand down, and she reviewed all the videotapes and ascertained that they had done nothing wrong. So she knows the people in the prison are lying to them.
All right. We'll gather all this stuff together and let's try to do this quickly. I'd like to get this into the court this week.
Yes.
But it all depends on getting this in. I need papers. I need, you know. And again, I don't care whether there's sworn affidavits or not. As long as it's a story on a paper with a signature, and that will call that person a next friend, you know, the information received. Or people that wrote their own papers or affidavits concerning their own experience in that prison, beatdowns and so on, and anything. We need to do this.
Yeah,
but
I
almost feel like we're
video from Ammon's wife of her phone call.
I almost think we're in Nazi Germany. It's so bad.
And so it's a first-hand account of what happened.
All right, well, I got to get that video somehow. See if you can't get a copy of the video.
Jan's got it, and it's also on the...
it in Facebook. But, you know, we have to download it to get it into the court.
Yeah. And it's also on the Redoubt News paper.
Right.
Yeah, so you should be able to get that.
All right, anything else, Robert?
No, that's I just think that with the reaction from the people in the county and everything, bringing out food and travel trailers for the protesters and all, that there's a movement that's begun that's not going to stop.
All right. Let's move over to Ollie. I know Ollie's got something to share tonight. No.
All right.
Thanks, Robert. And we're looking forward to talking some more tomorrow and getting whatever we can together. So,
all right,
Ollie. And Jan, I got to leave tomorrow at 2:00. I'm going out of state for a few hours, but I'll be back Wednesday morning. But I'll be available till 2:00 to do whatever we can do. Okay,
no,
Ollie, you here? We may have to unmute Ollie.
Any Z's coming from? He's,
I've pretty much covered everything that Ollie might have, so.
I'm just looking to see if I can find him, unmute him, and... All right, well, there he is. I got him. Ollie, you should be unmuted. You got anything to add?
He's in the queue.
Ollie, Ollie, Ollie. No, I just unmuted him.
Yep.
I had my mic muted. Okay, you can record any video. Use what's called screen capture.
You're too low in volume.
Oh, you're too low. We can't hear you. Get closer to your mic.
Hello, how's that?
That's better.
Good.
Okay. You can record any video using screen capture. You can use OBS Studio, OBS Classic, NCHW Capture, and My Pinnacle. And what you do, you can either record a whole page or you can actually box a video and record the video and audio. And you can record anything that's on screen.
Okay, so we're going to have to get some software.
Yeah, and OBS... OBS is free software.
What does OBS stand for?
Open Broadcast Software or something like that. Google Screen Capture, and you'll see a bunch of them.
All right. Well, I'll find the program probably that will download any video that plays on a page. I used to have a program, but... it's so old, it's so long that it doesn't work anymore, but
yeah.
I'll find something.
Okay.
Okay. Anything you want to add to that or any papers you can get for us on this?
No, Robert pretty well covered. I do have a couple of questions for Robert. Didn't the local TV station there have that put two or three interviews on air when then they broadcast some local coverage?
Well, I know that they have interviewed a couple of people like Kelly and John Lamb, but I haven't seen the coverage yet.
I think I did. I think I saw somebody shared the actual broadcast on that on a Pahrump TV station. So I think they did broadcast it.
All right, well, if you can find any of that and, you know, get a hold of something, get it to us. If it's on TV,
yeah.
It's probably on YouTube, and we could probably that we can download if we have a link to that. So, all right, let's move on because it's a quarter after 11, and we haven't even gotten to Brent yet. There's no one else to speak, is there, Jen?
I know of. No one else came forward earlier.
Gerard, you got anything before we move on?
Oh.
Okay, Brent, if you want to take the mic for a while, try to keep it short because we ran so long and we'd like to get a little bit of an open forum here. But if you have anything you might want to say, you want to grab the mic?
I've got it. You can hear me.
We can hear you. Okay, this is Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence in the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, go right ahead.
Thank you. And... the only remedy for lawlessness, we've been hearing about lawlessness, the only remedy is true law. And the comments I make here may not comport with the views of NLA, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak. You never know what a fellow's going to say when you ask him to talk. But some of the things that came up, and I won't approach the Declaration of 76. Right now, and there were so many questions that came up. I'll hit some of them. I thought maybe it'd be a good time to make some comments about the questions that were asked. For instance, what do judges look for when you file paperwork? Judges look for the facts, and they look for the questions of law that arise. When judges go to school, they get set. They're lawyers, they go to law school, all lawyers, they get set in trying to recognize questions. And that's not bad. That's really good. They take law exams usually one per semester, one at the end of the semester, be two semesters per year, and there are no right answers on the law exam. That's not what will get the good grades. What gets the good grades is if you recognize all the questions that can arise and that can be litigated. If you can just identify them, you'll get a good grade. The law professor gives them a whole lot of facts about some crazy thing that happened that they're supposed to go through and say, well, here are the possible disputes. Here's the liabilities. Here are the questions that arise between people. So when you file a paper in court, that's what they're going to look for. They're going to look for facts, specifically dates and times. Very important. Has a lot to do with a lot of things. And the dates and times, their minds are trained. If they've been through law school, if they've passed a law exam, that's what their brain and their mind and their head, their psyche is trained to look for, and they'll look for that. And if you put in things that don't really matter, all it does is confuse them as they try to sort through and wade through what they're reading because they read a lot of stuff. I've watched judges walk, just local judges in rural counties, walk out of their offices with their arms piled up, holding a stack of papers that they had to read from their hips right on up to their chin, and things that people have filed. And frankly, most of it is written very badly. So they're looking for that. So the idea when you write papers for the court is to do what the man does that's angling for fish. You want to have a spinner that's sparkly so it catches the fish's attention. And when you're angling for a judge's attention, you've got to tell a story that gets his attention. What does that mean? That means facts. That doesn't mean law. Don't pile it up with too much law because he's tired of law. By this time, by the time he's got to that position, he has a good sense of what the law is, just like a fellow that knows right from wrong. In time, you begin to get a feel for, well, that's not what the law is. That's inconsistent. And he doesn't know chapter and verse, but he wants to tell a story. And it is true, the man that tells the clearest, cleanest story usually prevails. So that's what they're looking for when you file a paper in court. Another thing that came up was the question about licensing. When did the federal government or the general government of Washington, D.C. first license lawyers? And the answer is that, and it's still substantially true in the federal courts, there is no requirement that a person that practices law have a law license or a law degree, or to have to even sit on the bench. There's no requirement in our Constitution that Supreme Court justices be lawyers from Ivy League schools, much less have a law license, all those things. But we've developed that habit since about the 1950s, and it's not a good habit. And you can't even think about being on the Supreme Court unless you now have graduated from one of the Ivy League schools. And it doesn't, obviously, guarantee you have any brains. Like one fellow said, thermometers aren't the only things that are graduated and have degrees without having any brains. And lawyers are that way sometimes. But it has always been that you don't need a license. No, you don't. But you don't need a piece of paper, but you need a license in this sense. A license is permission. That's what a license is. It's permission from somebody who claims to have authority to allow somebody else to do something. And if you don't have the permission of the judge in the courtroom, you're not going to argue somebody else's case on behalf of another person. I've mentioned this before, I think. I've even been in federal courtrooms where the judge told me that I wasn't licensed in that federal court, specifically the court in Oregon, federal court in Medford, Oregon. And once the judge found out I was in the courtroom, he told me to come up, sit with my client. He said, I'll give you permission on the spot right now. You don't have to fill out any paperwork. Because a judge can do what he wants in his courtroom. That's what it comes down to. He's the administrative officer there. He can let off evidence in. He can keep it out. And if you don't like what he says or does, then you have the right of appeal. But as far as licensing, to really have a license of that piece of paper, it's always been a function of the states. In other words, if a fellow had a license from the highest court in his state, a license to practice law, then the federal courts would let you practice. You could apply for a license to practice in the federal courts, and they would look at whether or not you had good standing in the state with the highest court of the state, the Supreme Court of the state. And New York is not called the Supreme Court, but it's the highest court in the state. It's called the Supreme Appellate. No, it's called the appellate, whatever it is in New York, appellate court. And then the Supreme Court is the trial court. They turn it around in New York, which isn't such a bad way to do things. But the highest court of the state, if you have a license to practice law in any one of the 50 states, the highest court of that state, that also gives you permission at the same time to practice law. That means argue cases for other people, speak on behalf of other people in the rest of the courts of that state. And the federal courts will say, okay, if you've done that, then we have the right to say yes or no, you can practice in our courts. And that's all they look at. And it's been that way, by the way, since the beginning of our country. Since the beginning of our country. Now, the requirement, and before that, even going back to England with the Crown Courts, the King's Bench and the Court of Common Pleas and the lower courts, things haven't changed. As a matter of fact, we've always said in America, and this is where I think the error comes, people say that lawyers are loyal to the Queen of England and all that, that they can hold, and that's... All I can say is I've never taken such an oath. I've never been asked to, and I've never known any other lawyer or judge that took an oath to the Queen of England. I'm convinced that there is no such thing, having taken the oath. But our tradition is a solidarity. It's a solidarity here in this country. We're a common law country, and our courts are governed by common law, with the exception of Louisiana, which is a law of the city, a Roman jurisdiction. But even there, the common law is... overlays their French Code of Justinian. And the Supreme Court of the United States and the decisions by it fall down in Louisiana. Even Louisiana didn't have jury trials for murder cases until 1968, because the Supreme Court said they had to do that. Well, that's our common law, so you'd be overlaid on top of this law of Rome. But we in America have always been that way. And the states, the standards to practice law in the states have been very weak. It was easy to get a license to practice law in many of the Midwestern states back in the days when Abe Lincoln was practicing law. He didn't go to law school. He didn't go to college. He didn't. He didn't take a bar exam either. Here's what they used to do, and this is the law. And a lot of the states on the western frontiers, they moved west. You would get another lawyer who was a member of the bar, or had a license to practice in Illinois. You don't have to be a member of the bar where Lincoln practiced. You just have to have a license from the Supreme Court, the highest court of the state. And in those days, what you would do is you would get another lawyer to vouch for you, to say you're an okay guy, and to say you knew something about the law. And then you made your recommendation, and if the recommendation went up to the highest court of the state, the Supreme Court of the state, then no doubt, unless they do something ugly about you, then you'd be practicing law. There's a famous story where a fellow chased Lincoln down and he was practicing law. Lincoln was practicing law in, I believe it was called the 8th Judicial District. It was a very vast district, covered a lot of, and he spent most of his time on the road, going from court to court and county to county. There weren't a lot of lawyers, even though it was easy to get in. And this young fellow came to him, caught up with him at an inn, an outpost of an inn, one night, and said, I want a license to practice law. Will you vouch for me? He said, well, what have you read? And he said, I have red hairs on the back of my neck. And this is the way the story goes, anyway. And he said, no, what have you read? He said, well, I've read Blackstone, the 4 volumes. And he said, well, you... give me a pencil and a piece of paper. And he got him a pencil and a piece of paper, and Lincoln wrote down, this young man is a lot smarter than he looks, and I recommend him for the practice of law. And that was all there was to it. He gave the letter signed by Lincoln to the judges of the Supreme Court of the state, the justices, and he was a lawyer. But always with the practice of law in the United States, in every state, there was always a tough barrier. That wasn't the tough barrier. The tough barrier, and this kid didn't have this yet, he had to learn how to write pleadings so he could get his cases into court, and he didn't know how to do that. And it took him a long time to find somebody to to show him how to do it. And Lincoln faced the same problem. It was easy to get a license to practice law, but it was nigh near impossible. It took a lot of years to learn how to write pleadings well so the court would accept them and you could do something to your client. So there was a barrier no matter what. Justice Joseph Story of the United States Supreme Court in Massachusetts, there wasn't a barrier at that time, much at all, the law exam in Massachusetts. But the barrier was the same. If you couldn't write pleadings, you couldn't help your client. And Justice Joseph Story, before he became Supreme Court Justice, he was the youngest man ever appointed. Served longer than any other man, too, I think, even till yet today. But he wrote a book describing to everyone who wanted to read it how to write pleadings. And the rest of the bar, or the rest of the lawyers, I should say, in Massachusetts, were really put out by that he did that. But it's what he thought ought to be done. People ought to know how to write pleadings if they want to get into court. And he did it. But still, after he did that, then it became easy because it was easily accessible for men to write pleadings to get into court. So the High Court of Massachusetts then made it, from that point on, the bar exam really hard. So I sum up and say again, throughout the history of our country, it's always been the same in every state. If you wanted to practice in the federal courts, you had to first have license to practice in the states. And to practice in the state court, there were barriers, and there was always one tough one. It was either the bar exam or it was the barrier. A fellow had to learn to write pleadings, and the only way to do it was to find some other lawyer who would take the time to teach you. And you had to work hard at figuring it out and learning it and trying to write it all down. There weren't any books to show you how to do it. It was an unwritten thing, and you had to learn it from another lawyer. And that's the way the practice in the federal courts has gone. One other thing I'll mention, then I'll quit. I'll see what time to hear it. One other thing real quick. Somebody asked about, can federal prisoners, shouldn't they be put in Washington, D.C. in the District of Columbia? And the answer to that question is they could be put there if that's what they wanted to do with them. But, of course, the federal government has property, military bases. Under the Constitution, they have the right to have dockyards and shipyards and military army bases. And they have those all over the country. And traditionally, until the federal prison system got out of hand, until Alcatraz, federal prisoners were housed at military bases, army barracks, and navy yards. Leavenworth was a very popular place. That was a popular place. It was a place where federal prisoners were put. Sandpoint out west, navy yard there on the east coast, the ones they had there, Norfolk, that's where they housed federal prisoners. But the other important point about that is back at that time before Roosevelt, really pretty much, there were no federal prisons built anywhere. There were just military prisons. And beginning with Alcatraz, which became a showboat prison, a promotion, a baloney promotion, a BS promotion, a Hoover promotion to try to develop and promote the FBI, Alcatraz was built. And it was never even built because they didn't have enough prisoners. The reason they didn't have enough prisoners back there in the 1930s was because there weren't very many laws that were criminal laws on the federal level. And the reason for that was there are only four kinds of crimes our Constitution gives jurisdiction to the federal government to indict for. Only four kinds. Counterfeiting the securities and coins of the United States. Piracy and felony committed on the high seas. And then, of course, treason. And then violations of international law. So that's all there was. Until, really, as a practical matter, until Prohibition, I should say. Prohibition grew the federal bureaucracies. That was the great beginning. And federal criminal law began there. And then since the 1930s, since Alcatraz, by the time we get to the 1980s, one federal prison has been built. I'll put it this way. There are many federal prisons. I used to have, I've got them in one of my books on the jury, I believe it has the statistics about how many federal prisoners there have been. And back in the 1960s, there weren't that many. But it's grown exponentially, and it seems like I remember about 30-some thousand in the 1960s. But now it's between 250,000 and maybe 300,000. I remember back 4 years ago, it was almost 225,000 federal prisoners. And it's growing very rapidly because there are now over 5,000, almost 6,000 federal criminal statutes on the book, federal, not state. And many of those are overlapping. Nobody knows exactly how many they are because of the overlapping, how many criminal supposed crimes there are at the federal level. But we do know that the crimes far exceed any jurisdiction in the Constitution of the United States for the federal government to make certain behaviors criminal. And so it is out of hand, as was mentioned in the beginning. God doesn't authorize prisons, period. The only time he authorizes prisons, and at common law, anciently, our tradition did not authorize prisons. And the prisons arose in America as a result of people who didn't understand the fundamental nature of man, namely the Quakers. And they said, wait, in Pennsylvania, there were prisons in America, not anything before that. Just, they'd hold men before trials, but the punishment after for crimes didn't amount to prison. And any idiot that's been to prison knows that it does nothing but make people a lot of money. It doesn't stop crime. And the Quakers developed what they called the penitentiary. They said you put a man in a room with a Bible and tell him to pray, and when he comes out, he'll be reformed because he has a spark of goodness in him. Well, that's hogwash. It doesn't work that way. That's foolishness. That's childishness. That's idiocy. But that's what they taught. And the penitentiary system became popular, and the psychobabble community then got hold of it and said, we can really reform men. So they began to call them places of penance. And then today we've continued that tradition. We call them places of reform, correctional custody centers. We don't call them prisons. I just call them downright jails and dungeons. That's all they are, and that's all they have ever been. That's where you cage men, cage them like animals, against the laws of God. Well, John, that's enough. Thanks for a little time. I enjoyed listening to all the discussion before, too.
Okay, thank you, Brent. All right, let's go right to the Q&A. Take our first caller. Let's see, we have someone that just has anonymous, so let's take that person first. You must have heard you've been unmuted. Go ahead, anonymous.
Yes.
What's your first name and state?
It's Dan, and I'm in Oregon.
Okay, Dan, go right ahead.
Well, I want to just rattle off a few bullet points to help the cause here for what you're doing, because I've been, you know, listening for a while. Press coverage is good. I wanted to mention Hagman and Hagman, their show, because they get a lot of good coverage, and I think they would be very receptive to whoever your spokesman, and I don't know if it's you or if you have somebody else that acts as a spokesperson.
Well, if you can connect us with them or anybody, you know, anybody who can connect us with any kind of a programming or a show or something, we're good to go anywhere to talk to anybody. But if you think you can connect us with someone to get on their show or programming, get a hold of Jan. You can find him under our, let's see.
Directory.
It'll be directory, and you'll find him right away, Jan. Just give him a call and try to make a connection, and we'll get talking with these people, and myself or Gerard or someone will go on to the programming to tell people what we're doing and answer any questions they have.
Well, they do a Monday through Friday show from 4 to 7 Pacific time, or 7 to, 10 o'clock Eastern time, and they're in Pennsylvania. It's pretty much you go to their website, Hagman Report, and they have their contacts, and you just kind of, you know, you just throw it out there, and then they'll get back to you and put you
in
there.
How do you spell that, Hagman Report?
It's Joe and Doug Hagman. It's a father-son team show, and Hagman is spelled H-A-G-M-A-N-N.
Okay, so Hagman Report, if we Google it, we'll find them?
Yes, yeah. Okay. And you'll see they got a YouTube channel, everything. You'll see they're right in line, and, I mean, it's just, they probably will put you on next week because it's something where the Holy Spirit moves, and that's what I try to dial into. That's a lot of what I do where I'm at locally and nationally, is to connect people, and I see God doing it, you know, and that's what it's about, and I feel that's what God's using me for. So somebody mentioned InfoWars, Alex Jones, that's another one. He did investigate Scalia's death. That is suspicious. If you don't know, you can look that up. I won't, you know.
Yeah, that one I saw that one.
Okay. And then.
Yeah, we tried to get on Alex Jones numerous
times.
Well,
don't. Yeah, you know, it's kind of hit and miss. So, you know, you got to move on. But Freedom Watch, right. Larry Klayman, Judicial Watch is another one. Their websites are available, and I would suggest reaching out, contacting them. John Whitehead, who's the lead counsel for the Rutherford Institute.
Yeah,
it's another
one. Yeah.
Okay. And then
John,
I don't know if you – okay. And it's got to have a kind of a point guy, and I don't know if it's – I think you might be the best one as far as communicator. I think you're more effective. I'm not, you know, saying no, but other people aren't, but whatever, you guys figure that out, you know. But Rand Paul, contact him at Ron Paul. You probably have, but that's always good to follow up on because they're right in line with exactly what – you know, National Liberty Alliance is trying to do. So,
we'll send them a copy of our paperwork and see if they're interested in participating with us in some way as far as Rand Paul is concerned.
Right. You know, especially with these recent developments with the Bundys, that is already on the back burner, I guess you could say, but it was front and center just a year ago. So, and the Hammond Ranch, you know, the Hammond's in jail. I would attach a National Liberty Alliance to a request to the president and the attorney general to pardon the Hammonds that are in jail, because I know that Donald Trump is already aware and familiar with that. And that's something that he was discussing when he was campaigning out here in the Western states.
Right. Yeah, we made our connection with him out there when he was making connection with those people, and he became interested in what we were doing. So we've been told, and we fed a lot of paperwork to them, and we continue to do that. So, you know, I know he's got to move in his own timing. You know, I mean, he can't make all these changes so quick, and he's got to figure out his plan on what he's got to do and when he can do it. So
he seems to
be interested.
He's still adjusting, learning about the, you know, he's dealing with all the different things, the global things and the deep state and all that. So I think he'll come into a good balance soon. It may take a while, but it's put a pardon in and then, you know, attach it to a press release and then take a look at all the media that's in the White House press pool. And when you do your press releases, release it to all those, and I think I'm just putting that out for suggestion to get mileage.
Right.
And then that's all. I mean, my personal situation that I'll just briefly touch on, and then I've got to get off the line, is I'm in Oregon. I have a circuit court here that, long story short, I had a private party make allegations against me. They were not true, but they brought me into court. And I'm not used to going to court. It's all new to me, right? So I look at the laws, and it says I've got a right to this, A, B, and C, right? So I go into court, and then I get an allegation that for some reason the private party wants to push an allegation. And the law says I have a right to a trial. It's a civil allegation. And I go, okay, well, then let's set this for trial when I'm summoned to a hearing. And if I don't go, I get arrested, so I go, and then they go, well, no, you don't have a right to trial. Well, wait a minute, here's the law. And then it gets in, they bring up a statute that's in directly opposite to the Oregon law. And the Oregon law I'm referring to is Article 1, Section 17, that says everyone has a right to trial in all cases.
Is, that's why we call these things jurisdictions unknown, because they got so many jurisdictions and they use whatever it is that they can use to go whatever direction they want to go. And it's just a mess. And this is true in all courts.
Yeah. So I mean, that's one thing. And then there's all these damages that are piling up because I've got continuous allegations being made against me, and they're piling on against an order that a judge issued where the judge violated the law. And I never see a lot of people waive their rights. I never did that because I'm like, well, let's figure out what's going on here, set this for a trial. And get to what's behind, you know, and it ended up being, you know, I didn't know at the time, but it ended up being a bunch of fraud and perjury and involving some false police reports. So that, you know, the judge said, no, we're not going to do that. Well, then it's all on the record. It's all on the court. You know, it was recorded and everything. It's real clear. I made it clear that, well, no, this is a hearing, right? Okay, well, it's set for a trial. Oh, no, we're not going to do that. And I was disallowed due process. I was not allowed to have discovery. So I couldn't even, it was like a kangaroo court. I wasn't even able to respond to allegations because I wasn't able to have access to the allegations that were made against me. So, I'm not a lawyer, so, and I'm not used to going to court. And so I read and studied all these laws and then filed an appeal. I didn't highlight that. I should have highlighted it more. I was getting into more of the specific allegations, but it's really not even about the allegations. I mean, the allegation could be, you know, somebody's accusing me of stealing a pack of bubble gum, you know, and
it's all
about
the due process.
Yeah, it's about, well, wait a minute, the judge violated Oregon law. And so that means
you have a right of due process. That makes it a federal issue. You can get into a federal court under that because you have an unalienable right of due process. So I always make a federal issue out of everything because it's always the same thing. They violate you constantly, take you into jurisdictions unknown, have no idea what jurisdiction I'm in. They violate your right of due process, and that's it. You sue them all, including the judge.
Well, I mean, suing the judge, here says they have this immunity, right?
Immunity. That's not recognized. Well, you could beat that. Even in federal, look at there's a lot of U.S. Supreme Court rulings concerning how that works. Look at, they have an immunity from anything as long as they're following American jurisprudence, they're following the Constitution, they're lawful and doing things the right way. But once they do something outside of their authority, once they violate your unalienable right, they've lost all protection, and that's the ultimate law. No matter how you go.
Well, they did violate the Oregon law, which also violated the several parts of federal law, which all the state constitutions are written after the federal constitution and the Bill of Rights and the amendments. So that's what's. And, you know, the Oregon Constitution, I've read them, a lot of them, but that one, if they actually followed it, it's actually one of the best ones, but they don't do that. So they did that, they violated, and I know that's Title 42 or Title 18 that says they, you know, have immunity, implied immunity because, so they could, you know, otherwise everyone would be suing them.
Yeah,
but,
well, you'll read that they lose immunity in 18 and 42 once they come outside the law and outside their jurisdiction. They lose all immunity.
Okay, well.
And the key thing is this. Remember, the Constitution, you know, when you read Article 3, okay, they have jurisdiction concerning anything that is in the Constitution. And the Bill of Rights is part of that Constitution. So anytime you're rights, your unalienable rights are violated, you need to, in order to get justice, you'll never get justice in the court that's violating them, even no matter you go through the appellate system, you'll never get justice there. You have a chance at getting justice in a federal court, the key thing about what I've discovered is you got to tie up the judge, and you got to be careful not to go after the judge in an open manner. But you got to signal the judge certain things, in my opinion, to make him realize that you will go after him if it's necessary. And you got to put him in a box. You got to take away any place where he thinks he can hang his hat and go for the other side. So you got to really neutralize the other side. And generally speaking, if you're using the Constitution, I think it's a pretty easy thing to do. Again, if a judge violates your right of due process, there's nothing else to talk about. You can show proof of that by getting the records and so on. Usually they'll try to deal with you. The judge will encourage the other side to make a deal.
Yeah, I know.
If they see that you're a pushover and that you don't know what you're doing, they're going to take you right down the railroad. And they'll work with the other side and railroad you. So you have to be careful.
So, I mean, I did the next logical steps was to go to the higher courts. But once it went to the state Supreme Court and the Chief Justice, Thomas Ballmer, said, well, no, we're not going to, we've processed this and we're not going to respond, then now I know it's a federal matter. It's just a matter of getting the right filings and I figure I'll file in the closest federal district court. And then But again, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not used to going to court. So that's what I'm in the process of doing, is trying to find a lawyer, because there's a lot of damages.
Yeah, but you're not going to find a lawyer to go up against these lawyers and judges. They won't do that. I mean, if you do find someone, they're really, you're not going to win. The deal is made in the back room. It's unfortunate. Sometimes it's a wink and a nod or a handshake, but generally speaking, that's what it is. But bear in mind, anytime you, as far as I'm concerned, any court I walk into, they only have one shot at it, because they've already violated my unable rights, because I know the court I go into, I can see quickly that they don't have the jurisdiction, and also they don't give me the due process. So right there are two constitutional issues. Immediately takes you to the federal courts. That's called going to court for cause, you know, to move to the federal court for cause.
Yeah,
the jurisdiction of that decision now is in the hands of that federal court, because that's what Article 3 says. That's their jurisdiction. The state can't make those decisions.
Right.
Clearly nothing under the state, the counties and the town courts, or under that, that's all irrelevant. You know, they can't make those decisions. So, and
right,
again, that's,
so that's
where it's at. But you have to tie the hands of the judge. That's what I have discovered, because the judge will always railroad you. He'll always go along with the other side. Whenever you're going up against the government or a judge or anything, they'll always go on the other side. Go up against big corporations, they'll always go on their side. So the only way to deal with that, and I have discovered, and it took me a while to a lot of frustration to actually put it into realization in my mind, that every time I walk into court, I have to first fight the judge. And once I realize that, then I know I walk into court, and I neutralize that as soon as possible by writing the papers in such a way to let the signal the judge that that's my intention to go after him too. Look, if you're going after a judge in a lower court, there's a good chance you'll go after the judge in a higher court too. And the other thing is, again, is you know, you have to understand, you know, how some of this process works, you know, especially like, you know, the IRS, for instance. And we spoke about this a little earlier. They have to have fiduciary authority, and they have to have proof of claim. If they don't have it, they can't do anything to you. And if you let the judge know, you know, making the point, I've seen no documented evidence. I don't see a proof of claim. I don't see any fiduciary authority. You just took the breath right out of that judge, and he's going to go to the other side and say, if you ain't got this stuff, and I know you don't, you better make a deal here.
Uh-huh.
And that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, part of what I'm dealing with is private party allegations, which are false, but the other part is, wait a minute, it doesn't matter what the allegations are, it's that the judge and the court is not
Are those allegations in affidavits? Have they made a sworn affidavit of these allegations?
No, what's happening is the district attorney is simply using statements.
That's irrelevant. Now, take it into a federal court, because, again, that court, without a sworn affidavit, there is no case. Someone has got to come into the court and make a sworn statement. Anybody that's going to make allegations against you, it's got to be sworn. You have a right to face your accuser. And if they're going to make it, I want it under oath. And you'll want as many of them as possible. The more, the merrier. Because if they're all lying, they're going to contradict each other is what's going to happen. You look for the contradiction, you'll find it. You know, when you have two or three or four people or even more telling a story and they're all colluding, let them talk. Talk, ask them questions. They're going to contradict themselves, because the lie always reveals itself. Truth will always be consistent and constant, you know? So any good detective will tell you that. That's what they're looking for, the contradiction. Wait a second, Joe told me this, and earlier you said that. How does that work out? You know, whatever it is they're talking about. That's how it works, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why the system with, a trial by jury, you know, getting everybody getting up there telling their stories and the facts, the jury listens in, and they can generally usually figure this out. You know, as long as they're free to do so. Unfortunately, many of these people are tainted by a judge, a judge's thoughts or ideas concerning the law, and they're fixated on that, and they can't make the right decision. because the judge told me if this, that, or the other thing, that, hey, this, that, or the other thing is the case, you know? And that's where the problem runs in. And these juries are tainted. You take away the ability of a judge and the prosecutor from tainting the grand juries or the judge tainting the trial juries, you take that away from them, and I think you'll get good cases most of the time, pretty much most of the time. Occasionally, of course, mistakes are made, but I think that'd be very rare. And again, it only takes one person to see the truth and deny the conviction, and then they got to walk. But even there, they've turned that upside down too.
Right. So that's where I'm at. I need to file in federal court, but it's all new territory to me. So that's why I'm looking for some type of assistance, being somebody knowledgeable that's done that before. And then, you know, that's where I'm at, you know, and then
well, again, you know, you sound like you got the ability to work through these things. If you read papers and you know, look, take some of our courses, look at, we have a book that we put together on access into the courts, which tells you, you know, lays out how you write papers, what they're looking for. I don't usually use all of that process because some of it I think is, it's what they want to do, but I don't think it's necessary. But in any event, with your kind of a case, you might want to go in that way because it's a civil case. And you want to, well, at this point it becomes, well, I guess it's still a civil case. But you look at, if you don't want to know your case the best, you got to have certain mindsets. And again, in my opinion, it's really simple. If people can really come down to realize how simple it really is in the sense of looking for, you can't have a court case without a sworn affidavit. Someone has got to swear something against you. If that's not, there is nothing if that's not there. And you got to make that point. You can probably close the case down with that alone if no one's got any sworn affidavits. That's number one. The other thing is always look for the jurisdiction of the court. Are they going beyond their jurisdiction? And are you in jurisdictions unknown? Are they pulling rules from here and laws from here? I mean, just pulling all this stuff together. That's another thing you want to look for, but I don't think you'll have that problem in this case because it's a civil case, but you could.
Well, I mean,
but
I have
the fact that you're not getting due process is the key part of this whole thing.
Yeah, I was trying to introduce evidence into the court, and the judge basically said, no, I don't want to see the evidence. I decide what the truth is. I decide what the facts is. I mean, this guy's on a high horse. He's on a head trip.
Yeah, it doesn't
but he
even
issued
make
an
sense
order.
For a statement. Yeah.
Well, here's the problem. He issued an order, and now I'm being accused, and I've been arrested and falsely accused of violating the order. So now they're coming after me with criminal charges.
So now they're moving to the criminal. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've been falsely imprisoned like 2-3 times. And so it's very unsettling. So I've got a jury trial scheduled, and I'm freaked out because it's caused me to lose a couple jobs. I mean, I get blindsided, and then, you know, and it's so ridiculous that you would think, you know, I put my faith in God and hopefully the jury, and but the problem is I don't have a lawyer, so I've been assigned a public defender who is completely incompetent. He's got some mental problems of his own, and I'm in a little small area in Oregon, and so they only got like one public defender, and it's very unsettling. It's very disturbing,
yeah.
And it's like the worst of the worst. And
these courts
so.
Are very abusive. Well, we hope the best for you. And you're right, you need a lawyer, but where are you going to? That's a hard one to find. I mean, again, you might be able to get somebody that look at this thing correctly and deal with it correctly. You know, again, I'll go back to lawyers again. Most of them are incompetent, again, in my opinion. They're dumb as a box of rocks. I just can't believe the paperwork that some of these people put in, the arguments that they make, I just can't believe it. And I'm not a lawyer, you know?
Yeah.
And,
but you have common sense. You have common sense, and you have the spirit of the living God living inside of you. And so do most of us that are listening right now. But, you know, I've got some lawyers like this guy up here in Oregon, his name's Jim Leuenberger. He ran as governor of the Constitution Party. Didn't win, but he ran. I ran for mayor here. You know, we're all trying to do something, right? So, right. But he wants $15,000, and it's like out of my budget. So I'm just asking for people to pray for me, and that's all, because ultimately, that's we all need God to like lead us and give us the victories. So, and I'll just
We appreciate that. We'll keep you in our prayers, and we do have a prayer group that, and I know there's people that are on the prayer group that are on this meeting tonight, and I'm sure they'll bring it up at the next prayer group and make a mention for you in that prayer. So,
and another one last mention. It's a pretty good look, a good read, is a website called the U.S. Observer, and they have some pretty good stuff there at Snoke. And they do a lot of good work to try to help a lot of people that are getting railroaded. Me, I have a little dinky website called SaveAmericaNow.com, and I try to promote, you know, what you're doing up there too. So God bless you all, and thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate it. We appreciate all the information you gave us also. I think I went a little too hot for some of these, but I don't know. Maybe the Hagman report we can get in. Freedom Watch, maybe. I don't know. I don't think we'll get into
Freedom
Watch.
Get a hold of Hagman. I would get Hagman's. Yeah, Rutherford and John Whitehead. But Hagman has a show that's got really good coverage. And if you get on Hagman, you could probably, after that, get a... And he sends some stuff with the people that are there on the InfoWars. But just be patient with them. It might take a while. And don't worry about it, whatever. But, right now, they might not be the best coverage right now.
Yeah, we directly don't go try to get into these things, but our, you know, people who are working with NLA, you know, members and state organizers and county or whatever, they'll try to get us connected with certain groups or places, and then we'll get onto a radio interview or whatever, you know. So we kind of look for them to do what they can, but we're going to go look at this Hagman report and see what.
Yeah, send Doug or Joe, you check them out. I think it might be a good connection. And then I did something good today, accomplished some good stuff. So God bless you all, and thanks again. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot. Okay, we're going to spend a few more minutes. We'll go to our next question, which is Fred from California. How are you doing, Fred?
California,
we're going to have to keep
Fred,
it short.
I wanted to make two comments about NLA membership and two questions for Mr. Winters. The first comment is, we only had two people at our prayer meeting. We need more people. Secondly, on the courtroom observers, we need to organize with them for your filings in these court cases so we can have a cadre of personnel present when these things are being read in an open court. Now, my question for Mr. Winters is, under the common law, how many points of law are there? And if a judge is in bad behavior, shouldn't it be like a cop firing a bullet where that guy instantly goes on suspension until the case is resolved? I yield and be quiet.
Well, as far as the judge goes, the remedy against the judge is impeachment, and that's a matter of the legislative branch, which would be Congress. And there have been several judges impeached through our history, but most of the impeaching in the well-known cases occurred very early on. It was something that was used pretty often because in those days when the country started, people were down on the federal courts. They were down on them because they thought if they ever got entrenched, that we wouldn't be able to get rid of them, and they would begin to run roughshod over us. And I think that's come true to some degree. But there's also a judicial board that you can make complaints to concerning judges, and they're under discipline too. They're under an ethics code. I've discovered they don't follow it close, and if a lawyer complains about a judge or tries to take a judge to task, they'll close ranks real quick, and he'll probably be disbarred wherever he's trying to practice. And I've had friends that's happened to. And they will use any excuse to get rid of a lawyer that makes life just less than relaxing. They want a relaxing day. They don't want any trouble. They want everyone to do what they say. Well, of course, I understand there's supposed to be respect for the judge, and we're not to fight him. But it's gotten, the federal courts have become very powerful. As a matter of fact, lawyers say, and I've heard them say, I've heard federal employees, lawyers that are employed by the federal government say this, that I used to know that were in my local area. And I was discussing something with them. One of them called me, and here's what happened. He called and asked me a question. He said, well, look, I'm not a lawyer, and I thought you might know the answer to this question. I said, what do you mean you're not a lawyer? Well, I practiced in the federal courts. He said, we don't know anything about the law. The law is a seamless garment. Well, that's really true. And all we know is just this narrow little thing. He was on some kind of a federal drug task force or something. And he wanted to ask me a question about some point of law that had to do, by the way, with, it was spoken of earlier, not suing people, but in rem against the property, forfeiture, pagan doctrine from Rome and Babylon, by the way, as though things have mind, will, and emotion. It's like declaring war on drugs. That's asinine. Drugs don't have mind, will, and emotion. Drugs aren't persons. Drugs can do no wrong. They can do no right. But it's a way
war
to,
on terror.
We can go right on. War on terror, war on drugs, war on poverty.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're wrong. And war on guns. There's another one, you know. But the whole thing, it's from Rome. It's from pagan Babylon. And it's going after things and not people. People are criminals, not things. Some people are. They're criminals. They have evil minds. As the law says, they have to have a guilty mind. And it's men that make things happen. And that's what God says. That's what I see. It's abundantly apparent. And if you do anything else, you fall into the ugly trap. And the other thing about that forfeiture, by the way, things are not evil. And to say that they are evil is, by definition, idolatry. Because you're attributing to some part of the created order and not the creator himself. You're attributing the powers of personhood to a thing. All over the world throughout history, men have attributed powers to thrones. If a monarch has his haunches parked on some chair someplace that's a special chair, then they say he has a special authority. Or if he holds a scepter, a special scepter, or if he has a certain crown sitting on his noggin, then that crown has power to give him all that kind of stupid stuff. That's idolatry. And forfeiture is part of pagan idolatry. Although I know men don't look at it that way, and I'm sure they don't think about it, but all pagan idolatry is about making money. And that's what this is about, and getting people to think that things are evil. Anyway, that's another subject. I shouldn't probably go off on it like I did, but it's very important enough. It was brought up a while ago. It's an encroachment of Babylonian law, the law of the city, and our law of the land, our law of the land country. So that's, but judges, impeachment is the common law way, and that's why it's part of our Constitution, because it went on in England that way. Judges could be impeached, and that's what we said we'll do here. It's right that the elders, that means the senators, senator is a Latin word for old people, senile people, same root. And it means, and those are the fellows that are to have the authority of common law, the elders, to get rid of judges that have done things that are objectionable. And it's not being used. That's the problem. It's not being used today. The Congress doesn't, most people in Congress, been my discovery, haven't read the Constitution. And the ones that have read it haven't contemplated it. They don't understand really what it says. They've never been told, as most people. It's simply the common law. Now, you said a while ago, you asked the question, I think you said, how many fundamental first principles are there? Fundamental first principles. And the common law, our common law, is the only common law there is. The common law is the laws of nature, and the laws of nature is God. It comes in two volumes. And Blackstone says this in his first volume. This came from the Scottish Enlightenment. It's always been true. It's just that those fellows in the Scottish Enlightenment, then John Locke, he was a fan of the Scottish Enlightenment. He picked the whole idea up. The Scottish Enlightenment arose out of the Reformation in Scotland. John Knox was the key figure there. And Knox and those that were with him, they established the authority of the laws of nature's God in Scotland. The laws of nature's God is above all men, including the Pope of Rome. That's what the Reformation was all about. They said the Bible, the law of God, produces the church, produces God's people. And Rome said, no, the church produces the Word of God, and there lies one way to frame the difference between the two. And, of course, the church in Rome was the priesthood. It didn't have anything to do with it. And still to this day, the people that go take Mass are not the church, according to Rome. The church is the priesthood. And that's never said, but that's the official doctrine, and they know that. And they play it that way, and they make sure it stays that way. And they say the Bible is the product of the church, and the Reformers said, no, the Bible is the product of God, and the church is the product of the people. That's the first volume. And then out of the Scottish Enlightenment, they begin to say, well, yes, God reveals himself in nature, in the nature of things, the way things are, and they will not change. The laws of the natural world, the laws of physics, we call them sometimes. Physics is the Greek word for nature. And so there are two volumes, the law of God unwritten and the nature of things. And in the second volume, the law of God, Blackstone says it this way, the law of God written in the Bible. Then our Declaration of 76 says the same thing. The laws of nature, that's the unwritten law, the lex non scripta, and the laws of nature's God, that's the Bible. That's exactly what that means in the Declaration of 76. So when people say there's nothing in the Declaration of 76 that refers to what we would call Christianity, that's utter ridiculousness. That's exactly what that phrase means, not to mention the supreme judge of the world is spoken of there. Our Declaration speaks of that. The fundamentals, then, how can we know what they are? Hebrews chapter 5 of the Bible, the laws of nature and the laws of nature of God are our fundamental law as Americans, written and unwritten, common law and the Bible. Hebrews chapter 5 speaks there, uses a word it doesn't use anywhere else in the New Testament. It's best translated unwrought rudiments. Unwrought is an old English word that means untouched by the hand of man, untouched. And the Bible says there that it is the unwrought rudiments that are the fundamentals, that are the first principles. And the word first principles occurs there. As far as I know, it doesn't occur anywhere else in the Bible, translating that Greek word. And that's what it means. Unwrought rudiments means first principles, the principal things. Now, Jesus Christ put it this way. You have omitted, he said to the Pharisees, to the leaders of Judaism, you have omitted the weightier matters of the law, the weightier matters. What are the weightier matters? We said there are two, love God and love your neighbor. What is the love of God? John tells us that we keep his commandments, that we do his will, that we follow his law. That's love. You love the other fellow, do what God says to do toward him. Namely, and here they are, do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder your neighbor. That's the last five of the Ten Commandments. And that... those are the fundamental rudiments of which Hebrews speaks. There are ten. And the key of the ten is honor thy father and mother. If you do not honor your father and mother, do not work at honoring your father and mother and honoring their memory. If they're gone, never speak evil of them. You will not fulfill any of the rest of the law of God. And that's what Paul the Apostle says in the New Testament. Honor thy father and mother, which is the principal commandment, the preeminent commandment. I used to wonder because the translations say first commandment. When I was a boy, I'd say, well, what do you mean the first commandment? It's the fifth commandment in the Bible. It's repeated twice, Deuteronomy 5, Exodus 20. But it is the first commandment. So when we talk about the fundamentals, the first principles, and that's what our common law is, it's a law of first principles, we're talking about fundamental things. Now, we go to the law, that's in the Bible. There are ten, we call them commandments. They are ten principles. They're not commandments, except the fifth one is imperative. None of the rest of them are. They're just statements of standards. That's in the Bible, written. But what about in the common law, the fundamentals there? Well, we know that those ten are good in the Bible, and that's part of our common law, says Justice Joseph Story. Then we go to the next, or the other, any other principles we might want to find a good place to start. These are things we observe. They're not written down. We observe them. We may record them as we have in our what we call a Bill of Rights. The fundamentals are those duties, that those responsibilities that God gives direct to the individual. No mediator in there. Well, except Jesus Christ. He is the God-man. But they come to us direct from God. What are they? Well, those are our fundamental rights. We have 10 examples, or not 10. We have examples of them in the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment. We have a right, for example, trial by jury. We have a right to a public trial. That means an oral trial, not in writing, not secret between people. Those are fundamental things. We have said that we've observed in nature that these things are first principles. because the duties that God gives direct to the individual without any government or any other institution between, those government can't touch. That's my responsibility. He has given me direct responsibility over my tongue to speak, protected in the First Amendment, freedom of speech, or to not speak, protected in the Fifth Amendment, the right to remain silent. Those are fundamental. I have absolute fundamental rights to self-protection. Why do I have a right? Why is that direct from God? And it's come to mean, of course, in our day, not a bow and arrow, as it did in the days of the Norman invasion in England, when the common law required that every man own, every property owner, I should say, own a longbow and 40 arrows. That was the requirement of every Englishman. Well, now we say it hasn't changed. The fundamental is still the same. We've just changed the facts a little. We now say that we have a right to have an instrument that creates a detonation, that creates expanding gas, that drives a slug out of a barrel, called a firearm. And that is the way we understand the fundamental right today of self-protection, because if we can't protect ourselves and we're open to being maimed or killed by government, then government has interfered, hindered our duties before God to protect ourselves, protect our family, dominate the land, and do all of the other things he tells us to do. So those are the fundamental rights. You can find them in the Ten Commandments, so-called, in the Bible, and also a good place to start is our Bill of Rights. And there are others, too, that the Supreme Court has recognized that are not in our Bill of Rights, but fundamental rights, say one more time, are those responsibilities. Rights are responsibilities. That's what they are. That's what that old word, right, or the old Germanic, Anglo-Saxon speech means, the responsibilities. And the fundamental rights that our Constitution says our government will protect are some of those fundamental principles. That's it, John. Thanks for the question.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate that. All right. We're 15 minutes past the hour. We're going to end now. Sorry we couldn't get to everyone in the list. Next week we'll try to get to you, hopefully. All right. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and we'll take it up from there. Thanks for coming. Good night.